is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Boy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome into the John Murphy Show. I'm Donald Jones, sitting in with Steve Tasker. Murph is, I'm guessing, about to be or on his way back from the game last night.
He's connecting.
He is? Oh, he's connecting right now? Are
connecting.
You talking to him?
No.
All right. Well, you know, it was a rough night for Murph, I'm sure. Good weekend, but
pulling for Big Blue.
It just didn't end up well for Murph and a lot of Bills fans here, but it's okay. It's okay. And Murph is going to owe me something. I can't remember what it was that we put a little wager on it. I think it was like a meal or something like that. So he's going to owe me, and so I'm looking forward to that when he gets back. I'm looking forward to talking trash to Murph when he gets back tomorrow. But it was a long weekend, a long Easter weekend. How was your weekend?
It was really good. A lot of family, all that stuff going on. The tournament was on. There was a little light at the end of the tunnel with the long, cold winter we've been trapped in.
Oh, yeah?
We're still in winter, but
I was at home.
It was sunny and cold. We saw the sun for a couple of days in a row, and life got a little better. Like, what can I say?
Light at the end of the tunnel was just being sunny for like a day, two days,
and then – yeah, here we are today. It's raining.
I mean, it's so bad. Here's what's crazy, because I talk trash, because back home this weekend it was like 60 and sunny Saturday and Sunday. Yesterday I drove back, and when I drove back it was like a blizzard.
Yeah.
And then the closer I got to Buffalo, it got sunny. And my father called me and he's like, "Yo, it's snowing here. I know it's snowing like crazy up there." And I'm like, "Nah, it's actually sunny up here. Y'all are getting hit with the snow."
Yeah.
And so, I just don't understand what's going on with the winter. You know, it's just a long, brutal.
He will not let go.
It just won't.
It will not let go.
It won't let go. But it was a good Easter Sunday for me. You know, a lot of family, a lot of fun, a lot of time out with the kids, all my little cousins, my son. Saturday night, we're sleeping. Now, my son is 7, right? So we're sleeping Saturday night. He hates centipedes. And so we're asleep. It's like 3 in the morning. He gets up to go to the bathroom. Then he comes back, and he's like, he wakes me up, and he's like, "Daddy, there's a centipede in the bathroom." And I said, "Kayan, you better go kill it or just go to the bathroom." So he's like, "All right." And now this morning is really when it hit me that I actually said that to him, because I know he's terrified of centipedes. To be honest, I don't like centipedes.
Right.
But I at least kill it. But I know he went back in the bathroom and was terrified. And so he comes back, and I had this hand sanitizer, and he's cleaning his hands with the hand sanitizer at 3 in the morning. And I'm like, "What are you doing?
How exactly did you kill it?"
I'm like, "What are you doing?" And he didn't really say anything because he was still half asleep. He just jumped in the bed. And so I said, "You were scared? You didn't wash your hands?" He was like, "No, I was scared, Daddy." So he was like, and he never killed it, though. In the morning, the centipede was still in there.
Oh,
I got it in the morning,
right,
but
okay.
Yeah, he never killed it. He went and ran up out of that thing. Those are the times that, you know.
Wouldn't it be nice in life if the only thing you had to be afraid of was a centipede in your bathroom?
Right?
In your sink?
Man, just no fears, no nothing
been,
in life.
That'd be a nice place to be.
It was a good Easter weekend. It's good to be back here, though, back in the chair. And ready to go. We got a good show today. We are going to talk some national championship. We have Bob Babbage at 12:30. Babbage was Brian Urlacher's linebacker coach.
Yeah.
And Brian Urlacher Bob Babbage is going to present Brian Urlacher at the Hall of Fame ceremony.
Right.
And so that's a great honor for Bob Babbage. We actually had a chance to speak with him last week. So Murph and I had a chance to catch up with him for about 10 minutes. So that'll be at 12:30. 2:15, Bruce Feldman. And Bruce Feldman, we're going to talk some quarterbacks. He's the author of a book, It's the making of a quarterback?
It is the quarterback, the making of a modern modern quarterbacks. Right. So he wrote the book on what it takes to develop a quarterback. He's also got some thoughts about the rookies coming out this year, what their strengths and weaknesses on. There's been a little bit of thing we're going to get to in a minute about what Jim Moore, the head coach of UCLA Bruins, said about his quarterback, Josh Rosen, who's one of those top quarterbacks coming out. He had some things to say about his personality, and he's been and people the well, it's the age in which we live that the internet – The roof came off the internet after Jim Morris said some things about his quarterback, about what he's like, what it takes to get, you know, what buttons to push on Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
And, like, he didn't rip the kid, in my opinion. We're going to talk about this later, what our reaction is to what Jim Morris said. I mean, if you're a player, you're a little bit like, meh, you know.
he said it.
But, everybody who's not in football or who's never – maybe who's never been criticized in their life.
Right.
The lid came off, and they were like, you know, Jim Moore threw the kid under the bus. No. But we'll get to that as well and see. We'll talk about what Jim Moore said about his former player who's coming out in the draft this year as well after we talk to Bruce Feldman.
So that's going to be a lot of quarterback talk, which we do a lot of here in Buffalo.
Tell them about the Twitter thing. Tell them about the Twitter thing.
Well, yeah, we're going to get into the Twitter thing. And so the report from Jason Lockonfora was that the Bills are, quote, trying like hell to get up there in the top five to get a quarterback. And so,
which is music to Bills fans' ears.
Right.
I mean, that's what we all want them to do. We want to try and do that.
We all want to see them get up there. We all think they're trying to get up there, and we all want to see them try to get up there and get a quarterback. I think that they are trying to get up there. I don't know if they will be able to.
Right, and that's the big question is, there's no question, now that we're getting feedback from around the league, other general managers who the Bills are talking to about, you know, trading up, getting this guy, getting that, trading twice.
Mm-hmm.
The word is now they're going to get up to seven and then jump into the top five with the number seven pick because teams like the Giants, teams like Denver at the number five pick, they don't want to trade back to number 12.
Right.
But they may trade back to seven or they may trade back to five or whatever, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bills are trying to jump through those hoops to make that happen. And I think Bills fans have been looking for that.
Yeah.
They want to know what the Bills are going to be willing to do. And for those who are watching on MSG right now, the Giants at number two, the Jets at number three, as we all know, they made that trade a couple of weeks ago. Then it's the Cleveland Browns again. They have the one and the four pick. Mm-hmm. Then it's the Broncos, the Colts, the Buccaneers at seven, the Bears at eight, and the Bills are all the way down at number 12. So the Bills, it looks like, are going to have to trade up into the top 10 somewhere and then trade again to get to the number two spot where the Giants are. That's the big.
Right. And when you look at the trade that the Jets and the Colts made, the Jets gave up some picks. They gave up three picks to move up three spots.
Right.
So you have to ask yourself, well, how much will the Bills have to give up?
Have to ask yourself how much is too much because we're asking you. We want you, whoever's listening, get on Twitter, tweet us, let us know what you think is too much. I want to know what's – don't tell me no price is too high because then you're talking about the Bills moving to Toronto to get a quarterback. No, there is a price that's too high, and we all agree – we don't all agree on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what you think. How much – because we could put 16 different scenarios, and then we become overwhelmed with how many picks and who we give up and what a player and all that. I want to know what is too much.
Yeah, and I've been saying this on air. I think that they have their parameters on – what they're willing to give up. And to be honest, we talked about this in the office. I think those teams, the Giants, the Broncos, whomever it is, they have their parameters on what it is that they're willing to accept to move all the way back to number 12.
And what's too much?
What is too much?
What do you think is too much?
That's the question that we're –
do you give up 2 ones this year, 2 twos this year, 2 threes this year, and a one next year, and a two next year, and a three next year?
Mm-hmm.
That's a little too much for me.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's eight guys in the top three rounds.
That's the future of your team.
Right. That, to me, is too much. So I want to know what you think is too much, just the bare minimum of too much. How much is too much? Because there's no question we're getting feedback from all around the league. As we just talked about, the Bills are trying to get it done. They're trying to get it done.
Yeah.
How much is too much? Because right now, and you talked about this, and it's a good point by you, if it wasn't too much already, they'd have a deal done already.
Right. I truly believe that. When you look at teams already making trades – if the Bills were willing to give up everything, they would have already done it and up there. Because, I mean, you look at any of those teams, if you were to – and if the Bills were willing to give up everything, and if those teams were willing to accept whatever the Bills are offering, the trade would have already been done.
That's right.
But the trade is not done yet. And if that report is accurate, that they're trying like hell. Well, it's not done yet, which means that they're like, hold on, that's not enough. Or the Bills are like, that's too much. I'm not willing to get
And here's the thing, too. We don't know so much about this scenario. We can all talk about it. The Bills want to get up into the top five.
Mm-hmm.
But the Giants, to me, and I was telling you this earlier, the Giants are crazy to move out of the number two spot. They've got a team that they're trying to rebuild. They've got Eli Manning in place who has struggled. And, in fact, he's been under a lot of pressure. He has not played well in the last 3 or 4 years. The Giant fans are completely done with him, really. And why would the Giants trade out of the number two spot when they can get the heir apparent, still have Eli on the roster to go, and when Eli struggles – then you move the young guy in. You can sit him for a while. You got a two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback in front of him. Mm-hmm. You don't have to move Eli Manning out to draft this kid after the year you just had. Plus, and this is where the conspiracy theories will abound. Here's what if I'm the Giants, I stay right at number two. I keep playing Eli Manning, and I trade Odell Beckham Jr. for draft picks because then Eli's going to struggle even more. It gives you all the more reason to move the young guy in, like week 10, week 8 of the regular season after you're kind of out of it. You move the new kid in. You let him have a half a season to start getting ready for the next season, and you got the draft picks to build around him after that.
Now, the one thing you said in the other room which shocked me was you trade him within the division.
Oh, yeah. You trade – because, listen – Odell Beckham wants $16 million a year as a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy money. It's stupid money. Mm-hmm. Because if you pay him that, you're stupid. You can't build a team with a $16 million wide receiver.
Right.
And I don't care if it's that Dak Prescott's your quarterback or Carson Wentz is your quarterback or whoever the guy is or Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. Let him have him. Get their draft picks. I mean, because that's going to undermine the ability of a team to build a good team.
Yeah.
With a receiver who's only as good as how many times you can throw him the football during a game. He ain't the quarter. He's not getting the snap every.
Right.
He's not got the ball in his hands every play.
Yeah.
He's not a running back where you just turn around and hand it to him or throw it to him.
Yeah.
You can give it to Odell Beckham on an end around, but you ain't going to do that 25 times a game.
Exactly.
You just can't pay him that much. So let the Dallas Cowboys pay him $16 million a year. Let the Redskins pay him $16 million a year, or let Philly pay him $16 million a year, and then you take their draft picks and you build against them. I mean, that's maybe a step too far in my conspiracy theory, but, man, listen.
I mean, to trade them within the division, because that can come back to haunt you.
It may come back. Hey, listen, no doubt he'll come back and he'll have a great game against the Giants once, maybe this year, mm-hmm. which is fine. Hey, right. That's fine this year. But let me tell you, long term – that is a deal that's going to be better for the Giants than it will be for any team in their division they trade Odell Beckham to.
Well, how much is too much for the Bills? And we want to know from you. And if you want to join in the conversation, call us 803-0550 outside Buffalo, toll free 1-888-550-2550. We put the question out there on Twitter, how much is too much in terms of a trade to try to get up there into probably the top five, top six to get a quarterback? How much would be too much for you? When I look at this thing, I think, for me, how much would be too much? I'm okay with giving up. You swap one of those first-round picks. People say you give up your two first-rounders. However you want to look at it, your first-rounders for this year, a two, a three, and then I think you can get into next year's picks like a two from next year or a three from next year.
Well, we got one person, as Tech tweeted in already, says he'll go the two firsts in this year's draft, the 12 and the 22, which – yeah, everybody kind of goes along with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then a second this year and a third this year and then 1 second rounder next season and a player like Cordy Glenn who's gone already. But that's as far as he'll go. That's not too expensive for a lot of people. Two ones, a two, a three. It's two twos and a three and a player. That's as far as they go.
What about this? And this one is interesting, and I want to talk to you about this. The tweet is from Brian Cook, and it says, "What about Shady, number 12, and our third rounder to move up to number two?" Now, first of all, I don't think that's enough to move all the way up there to number two.
Say that again.
Trade LeSean McCoy.
Okay.
Your number 12 pick you give away, and your third rounder to move up there to number two, because you know the Giants need a running back.
I'd do that deal, but I think they ain't going to take it.
No, they're not taking it. I'm like, that's not
Shady's a great player, no doubt. He's the best player on the team,
right?
In my opinion, I don't want to get rid of him. But if you're only getting rid of him and a, what is a 2 and a 3?
A 12. Yeah, you're 12.
A 12 and a what?
And your third rounder.
Yeah.
It's not enough.
Giants ain't going to do that.
That's not enough. I mean, it's not enough because LeSean McCoy.
They'd lose their job if they made that deal.
Exactly. As much as LeSean, as good as LeSean McCoy still shows to be, he is 30 years old.
That's not too much.
That's not too much.
That's not too much.
That's not enough.
That's not enough.
But this thought of trading LeSean McCoy, and I put this out there last week. I think we were talking about this because you've been around the league a long time. Yeah. I've been around football long enough and been around this league long enough to see the business side of things and see teams like you see the Giants. Now, LeSean McCoy has never been in trouble or any of that stuff. But when you see the Giants talking about trading Odell Beckham, because money is in that as well. You know, they're not trying to pay him that type of money. Now,
right.
I don't see them actually trading him this year. I don't see teams offering what it is that they want for an Odell right. Beckham. But this thought of trading your star players, and a lot of fans will say, you can't trade LeSean McCoy. He's been the offense for this team for the last couple of years. And let me tell you something. Teams will trade a star player if it's good.
If
feel like
price
it's,
is
if
right.
If the price is right and they feel like it's going to make their team better. If they feel like they are getting whatever it is that they need for the future of their team, they will make that deal.
Yeah, but here's the thing. For me, I think I'm like a lot of Bills fans. If you trade LeSean McCoy, it's like you're going through this whole draft process to get a quarterback, and you're going to do it now without a safety net. Because that's what LeSean is.
Right.
He is a truly great player, and he is the one guy you know. Mm-hmm. You know he can play. You know this guy can carry you. He's the guy that goes in a foot of snow and snaps off a 45-yarder to win the game.
Yeah.
This is the guy, right?
You're right. You're
Nobody
right.
does that. LeSean does.
You're
and
right.
you're going to trade him. Now, I get it. But here's the thing, too, and we talked about this. The big unknown is, like, how much does Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean and Brian Daboll and those guys in that offensive side and the whole kit and caboodle of what you're looking at, how much do they believe that, whichever guy it is, you can pick a name, Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield, how much do they believe that guy is the guy, that he's going to be Roethlisberger, Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, Philip Rivers? Do they think, do they really, really think that guy's going to be one of those guys? Because then I think, there may not be a price too high.
That's
a pretty high price not to pay.
If they think that, and let's just.
Do they, though? Do they think, well, this guy's got a pretty good shot at it?
Right.
Because you think about this. Everybody goes, well, you know, this guy's not Andrew Luck. Well, listen, Andrew Luck isn't that high. That team is not that good, and he's been there for 5 years.
Right.
Andrew Luck has missed a year. Andrew Luck is not good enough to carry a bad coaching staff and a bad team to the playoffs. He's not that good. I don't pay that price for Andrew Luck.
Right. And everybody thought
Andrew Luck
was...
Andrew Luck is a shoo-in. He's an absolute... And he has been. I mean, they handed him the team, and he never embarrassed himself. And he's been played very well at times. He's been okay. But they can't build it. They ain't building a team around him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't get to the playoffs. They're in a team. They're in a division with an up and down Texans team. Mm-hmm. They're in a division with the Tennessee Titans, who, you know, they aren't that good, and they've got Marcus Mariota.
Right.
They're with what, the Jacksonville Jaguars, who won the division with Blake Bortles. So. Don't tell me like none of these guys are going to be as good as Andrew Luck. Well, yeah, you're right. I wish he was. He's got to be better to pay the kind of prices we're talking about.
But you're not hearing anything about these guys that you heard about Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck that year, it was like, yo, Andrew Luck is that guy. He is the next Hall of Fame quarterback.
And look what he's done for the Colts.
Right. But
they
you're not
stink.
Hearing that about any
they
of these
stink.
Guys.
They fired their coach and hired
their GM.
Frank
yep.
and their GM, and they stink.
Well, they need to fire the owner, but that's another argument. But I think that everybody was saying Andrew Luck was the next best thing coming out of college. You don't hear that about these quarterbacks. Now, teams will fall in love with a certain guy. What they say in the media, none of that stuff matters. What matters if Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean truly fall in love with a Josh Allen and they feel like this guy is what we think and more. He will be that guy. So if he is that, and let's just say the Giants – are like you make Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, they make their offer, and the Giants say, okay, you just offered us these two first-round picks. Yeah. You just offered us a second and a third. You put in LeSean McCoy, and we won't have to touch next year's draft for none of that stuff. You think they won't do that deal? Knowing that everybody looks at the running back position nowadays, like, we can find one of those guys in the fourth round or something. Yeah. Nobody like LeSean McCoy, but we can find a couple of guys that can really be productive for us. I mean, last year's draft of those running backs that were that good.
I got a lot of faith in Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott's ability to find guys nobody else wants. I mean, they did it all last year, and they got to the playoffs with those guys, right? I mean, they went from tanking in week two when the Jordan Matthews trade came to the playoffs. So I trust their ability to evaluate talent, and they got to trust it too. And this is – you're not getting on – listen, your tweets are not getting on the air. I don't want to know the max you'd pay. I want to know what you won't pay. I want to know the minimum you won't pay. Because we got a lot of notifications. Everybody's chiming in on Twitter about, I would do this. I would make this deal. I don't care about the deal you would make. I want to know the deal you won't make. Will you trade LeSean McCoy this year's twos, this year's two ones, this year's 2 seconds, and next year's one and a two? I mean, you got to start piling stuff on. No, you wouldn't make those deals.
No. And I think ultimately.
And right now, that's where the Bills are.
I'm telling you, I think that's where they are. That's why the deal has not gone down yet, because you have other teams that are probably calling the Giants too. Like, look, we'll give you this. And if you're the Giants, you're sitting there and you're like, well, we're fielding calls from the Dolphins, who sit ahead of the Bills right now at number 11.
At 11.
The Dolphins, probably the Cardinals, maybe the Broncos trying to get up there to number 2 from number 5 or wherever they're sitting at in the top 5. I think they're number 5. You have all of these teams that are calling you. Let's just let this thing drive up and see what these teams are really willing to give up.
Yeah, we said this a little earlier too. I think a lot is going to happen on draft day, because they're going to let this – percolate if you're the Giants.
Why
even
move?
If you're the Giants, if you're the Browns at number 4 and the Broncos at number 5. Those are the picks.
Right.
Those three. 2, 4, and 5.
And if you're the Browns and you're sitting there at number 1 and number 4, I mean, they have the best, because you can get whoever you feel like is the Andrew Luck, or whoever you feel like is the next Tom Brady. Let's just say that. And that's who you're going to draft number 1 overall, because you feel like he's the best player. The best quarterback in this draft, the best player in this draft, you're going to take him number 1 overall. Now you sit there with the number 4 pick, and you probably are getting calls from all of these teams offering you more picks so that you can now build out a team around this quarterback. The Browns might be the target team for a lot of these teams. Like the Giants sitting there at number 2, I can't see them moving from number 2 to number 12. Because the Giants are going to be sitting in a prime spot where they can get one of those quarterbacks. They can get Saquon Barkley. They can get Chubb from NC State. I mean, they can get anybody that they want, except for one person at the Browns stadium.
Right, but will they move up? Will the Giants go down to 7 where the Bucks are? So if then that's the
good question. How much are they getting?
That's the thing. And even in the article we're referring to, where you know there's you know the Bills are trying like HE hockey sticks to get into the top 5, and what it's going to take is 2 trades from the 12. You're going to have to trade into the top, like, 5 through 7 or 8 or 9 with all of those teams that are clustered there who don't need a quarterback, like the Raiders and all those. You're going to trade into where the Raiders are and then jump another 3 spots after that.
Right.
And then you're starting to talk about the cost of 2 trades. And that's really, to me, and I don't know what you think, that's going to involve some players.
Yeah.
You can't trade away the 2 ones, the 2 twos, the 2 threes you've got in this draft, and the 1, the 2, and the 3 you have in next year's draft.
So, all right, we're getting some tweets now. We got, I wouldn't trade any 2019 picks, and no more than 1 in each the second or third round picks. We got, I wouldn't trade the future first round picks unless you can get them back in the movie like Draft Day.
Yeah, he wouldn't trade more than 2 ones and a 2 and maybe a player. More than that, no. And that, I think that's, you know, that's true, because you got to think too, they did hedge their bet with AJ McCarron,
right?
And then there's now he's a little bit of an unknown, but listen, this
that
is a guy.
Draft pick.
This is a guy, right? This is a guy who went in, substituted for a quarterback that's, you know, Andy Dalton, who is a, let's say, a mid-range NFL starting quarterback.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
So he's been in the playoffs for four or five straight years, has never won a playoff game. Mm-hmm. A.J. McCarron should have won that playoff game that he was in replacement of Andy Dalton. Exactly. Somebody coughed it up
right.
and gave the game away. It wasn't him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played well enough in that game, but that was a good team. They've got a really – they had a really talented roster built around Andy Dalton.
Right.
Like, who I think at the time was just at the end or had just signed his first big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So McCarron was a part of that team. So they had built a good team around Andy Dalton, and that's what A.J. McCarron – won a couple of games in the regular season to end it up, and then got into the playoffs and should have won the first playoff game that team had won in 25 years
right.
back in the early 90s.
Exactly.
So McCarron is, to me, a very intriguing. Because when he came out, I didn't say it too loud because he was still out there. Because I thought, wow, that's a pretty good player.
Yeah.
He's got a pedigree that's unrivaled. Two national championships mm-hmm. at Alabama. Came out, and you know, he's just that kind of guy. Yeah, I think McCarron's presence, and I know a lot of people, it's not a sexy take mm-hmm. for me to say this. He makes it possible for you to say, you know what, our price is not that big for right. one of these top guys.
Right.
Because we've got this guy that we're okay with going in. We're not expecting A.J. McCarron to turn into Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm. But we think we can win games with him. And they've got – I know they believe that. So that kind of takes the edge off – at any cost for this first-round pick, right?
Yeah. See, I look at A.J. McCarron as, because of the unknown, I look at him as a rookie with the experience of a veteran, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
As a rookie, because he's unknown just like the guys in the draft. I mean, you just don't know. You've seen him a little bit, but you haven't seen him consistently.
He's had like a four-year apprenticeship.
Right, exactly. So he's been sitting back just watching everything.
With a good
learning everything. With a decent quarterback.
He was with Hugh Jackson.
Hugh Jackson, yeah.
He was with Andy Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
I got to have a lot of faith that he's got some water under his bridge that he's ready to kind of step up and say, listen, you draft anybody you want. I want to let me compete with him and I'll beat him.
Oh, he said it.
Yeah.
You know, and he's – I mean, this is a guy who – actually filed a grievance to get out of there, out of Cincinnati, because he wants to play.
See, there's a lot of positives about that.
He wants to play. He's like, look, it's my time now. You know?
I do think that kind of says, you know, still priority number
one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's not a desperation about this draft to get one of these, you know, top QBs out of college, because you got a guy that's you're not handing the keys over to a guy who's never done it before.
Right, exactly. All right, we're going to take one call. And if you're on the line, if you want to join in the conversation, you can join us 803-0550 outside Buffalo, toll free 1-888-552-550. We're going to try to get to some calls here before we get to a break. We're going to start with Phil. Phil, are you on the line? Are you there?
Yes. Hey, thank you, Donald and Steve. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I know you guys want to trade up into the top five. But first off, I don't think the Giants want to trade out of two. I know you can offer them a whole bunch, but I really think the Giants want a player at two. They need a player at two. So let's start talking about what the Jets do at three. Is that's where the whole draft falls, wherever the Jets do at three. If they take Mayfield, then Rosen and Allen fall back because Darnold's a consensus number one. So at the fourth pick, when they use that point system that Jimmy Johnson came up with, 12 and 22 allows you to get to four. Now, other people are bidding in there, so you got to sweeten that deal with a little something, which I think should be pick 96. Because the Buffalo Bills, if they can trade up and get their quarterback, the one that they like, and still keep 53, 56, and 65, those three players could be a blue-chip receiver, linebacker, and a lineman that put us from just being a playoff team to maybe hosting a playoff game.
All right, Phil.
Those three guys. So I don't care whatever else you want to trade up, as long as you keep those three blue chip picks, 53, 56, and 65, and do whatever else you got to do, that's what makes or breaks the Bills draft, because those three picks have to be three starters on this team this year.
Yeah, I get you.
It's in Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott to find those blue chip guys in there. But I really want to shoot for pick four, because then you figure only two of the four quarterbacks have gone, and you get your choice of the other two at four. And if you can't get the four, and they want to take Barkley, then you just sit there at 12 because there's only one other team that might take a pick, and that's Miami.
All right, Phil.
Yeah, but here's the thing. There's a couple of things there, Phil, and you're right. Right. You want to go first?
No, you got it.
All right, so here's the thing. Ask yourself this, and this is the acid test. If you're the Cleveland Browns, do you make the deal you just offered them? And that's a big question. They may, because getting even more now, but here's the Browns. They've got a ton of picks already.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, you know, that's like more of the same. And there might not, they're, you know, they may not want all those picks. They've got enough now. So the Browns are in a position where also not only they get one of those quarterbacks, but if Barkley's still on the board, they take Barkley as well. And they've got a quarterback and a running back that are franchise guys. So the you're right. The Browns is a shot, as a spot where you'd love to move up into and go. And I know you were gonna chime in as well.
No, I was just trying to stop him from talking.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He was going.
I got
he was
you.
Going.
Right. Now, but
last
that's the
thing. We're going to get to a break here. We got this one. Brad L. DeWeen. Brad
yeah.
D.
DeWeen.
Yeah, DeWeen. I would not Mike Ditka our picks this year.
Right. For the Ricky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, we're going to get to a break here.
That means trading every pick in
trading
our draft
every pick
for one guy.
For one guy.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't do that either. For a quarterback. I don't care what position.
Would you trade all of them except the seventh rounder? Well, no. Would you trade all of them except the seventh, sixth, and seventh?
No.
No. Would you trade all of them except the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh?
No.
Yeah, see? Yeah.
No,
see, now,
you
okay.
have six picks in the top three rounds.
Right.
I don't want to trade all of them.
So you
got to
keep going. You got to keep sweetening the deal and keep counting backwards. So
counting backwards from 100.
And that means, yeah, so that means, yeah.
Well, if you want to join in the conversation, you can join us. 803-0550, outside Buffalo, toll 3, 1-888-552-550. What is too much for, what wouldn't you give up if you were the Bills trying to get up there to get a quarterback? We're going to get to a break. On the other side of the break, we had a chance last week to sit down with Bob Babich, linebackers coach for Brian Urlacher, current linebackers coach for the Bills. We had a chance to sit down with him, and it was a good conversation about, you know, his time with Brian Urlacher and as a great player out there and teaching Hall of Famers and things like that. So Bob Babich, as soon as we get back from the break, it's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio, joined in studio by linebackers coach for the Bills, Bob Babich, getting set for his 16th year in the NFL, his second with the Bills, and getting set for a great honor. You are going to be the presenter for Brian Urlacher at the Pro Football Hall of Fame this August. Congratulations, coach.
Well, thank you very much. I'm so humbled by the, you know, the offer that Brian gave me to present him at the NFL Hall of Fame ceremony, and, you know, taking it very seriously. He's such a good guy and was such a good player, but more so than that, he was a great person to be around. So very excited about it.
You've been in the league for a while. Do you have to make a speech, or do they shoot a video? How does it work?
You know what? I'm not sure. I just got right now. He just gave me the parameters. He didn't have much of the information as of yet, but you know, I'm sure that here in the near future he'll give me all the details.
He's gonna go do some homework, watch some previews.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This is Donald. This is a big deal. I want to make sure that I do a good job, and you know, I already have some thoughts about him. Obviously, being around him for 9 years, I mean, I know what type of person he is and the things that he did. So, you know, I have some thoughts, but I'm gonna make sure that I, you know, take my time and do it the right way.
You know, it's. How hard is it for a coach? Now, for you and Brian, it's probably a lot easier. You've been around him for nine. You were around him for 9 years. But in today's football, guys moving around so much. How hard is it to build that type of relationship?
Well, it's not only the players. It's
the coaches
also.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it is tough to build a relationship. But I think, you know, you being an ex-player, I think that if the players know that you care about them as a person, first and foremost, I think that the coaching comes along with it. And in the NFL, if you could help the guys get better to help the team, that's the best way to earn their respect.
Coach, who got to the Bears first, you or Brian Urlacher?
Brian Urlacher. I think I caught him in his fifth year, maybe. you know, and then I think the year we left, I don't think he played after that.
So he came in at first round pick in 2000, I believe, right?
Yes.
You know, I came out of New Mexico, you know, first round pick, people knew who he was, but when you got there 5 years later, he was already a pretty big star and a pretty good performer, right?
Yeah, and you know the Chicago Bears, I mean, the face of the franchise throughout the years has been the middle linebacker, and he fit it, yep. So he you know, was already the face of the franchise when I'd gotten there. So, you know, I was just pleased to be part of the process.
Now, he seems like a guy who's pretty coachable regardless of where he was in his career, but what's it like to coach these guys that are already superstars?
Oh, yeah, he was. And you know, I think that one of the things I like to pride myself on is, you know, as a coach, it doesn't matter. Hey, my job is to make sure that you're doing things the way that we want them done, mm-hmm. and things that could help you get better, which in turn helps the team get better. And that was never a problem with him. And, you know, usually the good players, they like to be coached, and they want to get better. And, you know, he was never a problem.
He was NFL Defensive Player of the Year in 2005. Was that your first year?
That was my second year.
Second year?
Yeah, it was the second year. And
Was he like that year?
He, you know, obviously he's a playmaker. I mean, a big guy like that was a playmaker, and I think that that particular year, I don't know exactly what his stats were, but we went from, I think, 4-12 to we made the playoffs that year, and he was a big reason why. So I think that had a big part to do with it.
Do you stand on the sideline or up in the booth when you were coaching him, and you're like, man, this dude is really good. Like, he's doing some crazy stuff out there.
It was fun. I mean, at that time, you know, Green Bay was a big rivalry mm-hmm. of ours, and mm-hmm. Brett Favre was a quarterback, and you know, those two guys on the field, along with Lance Briggs, Charles Tillman, you know, Mike Brown, guys like that. It was fun. We had some really good players, Tommy Harris, and, you know, it was fun to watch. A lot of times you coach those guys like, yes, that's a good job right there. That's a good job. You keep doing that right there.
Right. That might be the best kind of coaching I would think.
Yeah, that's the best. Yeah, those are the guys that are fun to coach. I'm sure Donald was that.
But with Bob Babbage, the Bills linebackers coach, is going to present Brian Urlacher at the Pro Football Hall of Fame this summer. What do you do with a player like that? Do you can you, and you can do it on offense, I think, maybe easier, but can you tailor a defense to accentuate a player's strengths, a guy who's playing middle linebacker?
Well, I think it was the perfect storm. I think, you know, Coach Lovie Smith coming in with the Tampa 2 system, right, which accentuated Brian's skill set, and, you know, he took to it right away, and Lovie's system put him in position to make plays, and obviously he's a guy that has the ability to finish the plays, and that's what he did. I mean, you know, it was fun to watch him play and make the big time. He could sack the quarterback. He could defend a run. He could defend a pass. You know, we ran him down the middle of the field. Receivers would try to beat him down the middle of the field. He's 255 pounds, and you can't mm-hmm. beat him.
I was going to say, in Tampa 2, that's the middle linebacker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There was only a few times. After a while, you know, teams quit attacking the middle of the field because of his length and his speed and that type of stuff and his ball skills. He mm-hmm. had a, you know, in college he returned punts. He had a unique ball skill set. Yeah, he played wide receiver too, I believe. Okay. You could check it. So he's a talented athlete.
Did there come a point when you were coaching Brian Urlacher and the Bears and you thought, this guy's going to the Hall of Fame?
Well, yeah. I mean, at some point, you know, throughout the years that I coached him, I was like, this guy's special. And he has a special place in the history of the NFL, and the Chicago Bears in particular, being a middle linebacker. So being the face of the franchise for that many years, I felt like in my eyes he was, you know, a first ballot Hall of Famer, and fortunately it worked out.
See, when you get to that point, it has to be hard as a coach because at this point, when you feel like this guy's a Hall of Famer, you're nitpicking at little things. I mean, how much better can I make you as a player?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, and he's a smart guy. He mm-hmm. was a really smart guy. And our system, you know, was tailored to such that we had a small inventory and we ran the same thing every year. So we had to, as coaches, we had to make sure that we kept him, kept his interest.
Yeah.
And that was always the fun part of it. And the good thing about, as a coach, coaching a guy like that, you got to be on top of your game. And I feel like it really helped me. He was a guy that helped the players around him get better. And to me, he also helped me as a coach get better. So, you know, for that, you know, I have an awful lot of respect and I'm very thankful.
Early in your tenure there's one game I got to ask you about, and I read about this earlier in the day. Game against Arizona, the Bears down by 20, 19 tackles, forced a fumble return for a touchdown. Devin Hester said, we watched the film and everybody was saying he just turned into the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, that was the game, you know, where Coach said the Bears are who we thought they are.
Yeah, and right. That scored, was Monday Night Football.
I think we scored 3 points on offense and we won 24-22 or something. Two TDs on defense, and I think Devin had a return for a touchdown. And he did. He had an unbelievable game, and the strip that he had at the end of the game that Charles Tillman picked up and ran for a touchdown was, you know, just is who he is, and, you know, we always counted on him to make plays when it counted. It
must feel great, I would think, gratifying, when you got a great player like that who you haven't coached now. He's been out of the league 5 years. Mm-hmm. And to be able to relive that now and to know that you played a role in him going getting the highest honor in the game.
Well, I don't know what role I played. I think he had it, but I understand what you're saying.
And
it is. It's very humbling. I mean, you know, I'm a guy that I enjoy coaching ball. These are things that I don't look for. And for him to pick me was honestly a surprise. But, you know, I'm honored by it, humbled by it. And it's a neat deal to relive those times. Those were some good times.
You tell him, look, just go buy me a gold jacket somewhere else. Just so I can have my own, like, fake gold jacket since I'm presenting.
Yeah. I don't think my talent level will ever reach that gold jacket status or my coaching level. But it was fun. And, you know, once again, the thing that was best about Brian was he was a team player. His leadership was outstanding. I mean, the guys, he was the face of the team, and he led the team. And, it was really cool to be around.
Coach, we saw you on the field at the Combine a month or two ago working with linebackers. Any potential Hall of Famers in the incoming group?
Well, I always think it takes a couple years to find out exactly how good the guys were. But there definitely are some outstanding guys, and I've done that in the past. And, you know, when you get down there, you see these young guys that are just talented, and, you know, you think about, hey, where are they going to be in a couple years? And somebody in that group is going to be the face of some franchise and be an all-pro player and a pro bowler and that type of stuff. So it's really fun to watch them grow.
When you're running those drills, and last question for me, when you're running those drills on the field, and for any coach running drills, not just linebackers, what exactly are you looking for?
Well, you know, the thing that you have that is an advantage for you being on the field is you see how they react to things. If something goes wrong, they do a drill the wrong way or something. How do they handle it? You know, are they cool and they just go out and it doesn't affect them, or do they get flustered? And you see what kind of demeanor, who the leaders are. Believe it or not, you would think that they're all alpha dogs, you know.
Yeah.
But there are guys within the group that show that they have leadership skills above and beyond the others. So, you know, those are the things that you could get by being on the field.
And the times you've done it, that's got to help in the draft room, right, when you're making decisions, talking about players?
Yeah.
Hey, I was on the field with this guy.
Yeah, being on the field with those guys and being around them for that little bit of time. But, you know, me personally, I'm still a big advocate of the tape, you know, and that type of stuff. But every little nugget that you could get before the draft is something that, you know, helps you make a rational decision.
Great. Hey, Coach, congratulations. It's a great honor for you, I'm sure, and we appreciate you coming in here to talk to us about it. Thank you very
much. Thank you so much.
Coach Bob Babich, linebackers coach for the Buffalo Bills, going into his second year, and this summer he's going to be there in Canton when Brian Urlacher is inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He coached him at Chicago. He will present him at the Hall of Fame this August. We've got more coming up. Donald and I coming back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back. It was a good conversation with Coach Bob Babich about coaching Brian Urlacher. You were talking about Brian Urlacher.
Yeah, he's got a reputation of being one of the all-time great guys, great teammate, one of the guys who loves, great locker room guy, you know, as a uniter, you know, and includes all the guys, and they all like playing with him and against him, crosses, you know, all the lines from old guys, young guys, and so it's kind of nice to see him get recognized for going to go in the Hall of Fame. The reason I get it, a lot of what I heard it from is a former coach of mine. Rusty Jones was the strength and conditioning coach here at Buffalo during the early 90s, late 80s, and into the late 90s and early 2000s, and was went straight to the Chicago Bears after he left here, and he raves about the kind of work ethic and the kind of guy and person that Urlacher was, and that says a lot.
You know, it's always good to have guys on your team, future Hall of Famers, whatever the case may be, but when they're, like, great guys, it's the best. Because you've been with – I mean, I've been on a team with some dudes that you're just like, you could trade him right now. I wouldn't care.
Right. Great players, too.
Great players. You're like, you can get rid of this dude. Please, because I'm tired of even seeing his face in the locker room.
I don't want to change the subject for this, but you think guys on the Giants are thinking that about Odell?
I would think some of them are. I think they recognize the talent, but then all of the rest of the stuff off the field that now they have to answer to, you're just like, dude, come on, man.
I know.
Just calm down. Just relax. If you just relax, maybe you'll get paid. Maybe they will give you your money. But you're out here trying to, you know, capitalize and off of your name and all of that stuff, marketing for yourself. I get it. But at the end of the day, we're all out here trying to play football and win games. And what you're doing is actually hurting the team more than it's helping the team.
Yeah, and there's that atmosphere in the locker room. And you alluded to it. I was on a team with – we had five Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
We had Bruce, Jim, Thurman, mm-hmm. Andre, and James Lofton, and the coach, Marv, and the owner, Bill, and the owner, Ralph Wilson, and the general manager, Bill. They're all in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
So, and all of those guys were tremendous teammates. I mean, I vacation with those guys. That's how good of guys, you know, I think they are. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'd do anything for them. And so that's how cool it was to be on that team. Not only did you have one like Brian Urlacher on the Bears, we had five.
Yeah.
And then everybody in that locker room. And we had guys that, you know, like Ken Hull, who, you know, everybody says should be in. You know, he just goes on and on and on. So, yeah, guys like that make a difference. And it's nice to see those guys get rewarded. And particularly a guy like Urlacher, who struggled on a team. They got to one Super Bowl, got beat by Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have it, you know, it's going to be fun. And have Bob Babich, have Urlacher reach back in his past and have his position coach for all those years present him. That's pretty special.
All right, well, I'm sitting in for John Murphy. Steve Tasker sitting in my seat. Murph, obviously, traveling back from the game last night. Big-time Michigan fan.
We got to talk about that?
Yeah, we got to talk about this game.
We got to talk about Murph.
We got to talk about Murph. I'm going to talk trash to Murph tomorrow. He might get a little sensitive tomorrow. You know, I wanted to text him last night.
If you're going to swim in the water, you got to fend off the sharks.
Well, a wise man once said, if you're going to play in traffic, you got to be prepared to get hit. You know?
Listen, between Donald and I, Murph's been walking around like, hey, he's a big fan of John Beilein. He's one of our guys. I mean, he's going to get tickets. We're going to go to the Final Four. It's going to be great.
Right.
So,
the one thing, though, Murph did say last week, he was like, we're going to beat Loyola, Chicago. But he was like, I'm worried about Villanova. And Villanova showed it last night why you should be worried about – you should have been worried about that team. That team was good. I had someone tweet me and say, oh, they lost to Butler twice. Yeah, I get that. I mean, it's basketball. You lose games.
I saw them lose to Butler. I was in the building in Hinkie Fieldhouse in Indianapolis and watched Villanova get beat by Butler.
By Butler.
And I was like, well, you know, you can put what I know about college basketball into a thimble and still have room for a nice shot of liquor. But it was one of those games where Hinkie's a tough place to play. And Butler got hot and started snapping threes off, and it was exactly the kind of game that Villanova put on Michigan last night. You get the sixth guy, this Dante DiVincenzo comes off, scores 31 off the bench, and he was the guy.
Yeah.
And Villanova's got the National Player of the Year on their team.
Right.
And DiVincenzo was the guy off the bench.
Off the bench.
And carried that game. That's a pretty good squad.
I mean, as soon as he came in the game, it was lights out.
Oh,
as soon as he shot it up one time, it was like, man.
You knew it was good, too. And I don't know if you noticed this, too. Because I kind of get body language. DiVincenzo just walking the ball up the court. And, man, he was He was swagging. I mean,
he was feeling it.
Sticking his butt out, like, you know, just like walking up like, you know, like, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
I was loving it. I mean, because you don't see that too often. But you could just feel, man, he was on fire. He was on fire.
Yeah. I mean.
He was feeling it.
As athletes, and I know we got to get to a break, but as an athlete, you get into a certain zone sometimes. I don't care what sport it is, basketball and you're shooting. If it's football, you're wide receiver. You get into a certain zone where it's like, yo, this dude can't touch me.
Yeah.
You know it. You can feel it. He can't even hold my jock strap right now.
It got to the point where you knew DiVincenzo, it didn't care. If he had any space to shoot the ball past half court, and he was feeling it was going,
it was going up.
And it was going in.
And Jay Wright couldn't say anything. Because he was pulling up from kind of deep. Like, he's walking up the court and just pull up.
You can see Jay Wright, the coach was like going, yeah. He's like raising his hands, going, leaning back, going, what are you doing? Oh, yeah, that's my guy.
It comes to a certain point where you're just like, all right, let him shoot
it. Well, then, too, and then also,
fire.
And the thing that made it go, and you win a national championship, was because all of a sudden the guy's driving to the hole.
Yeah.
You know, and he's putting it behind his back, going right through the middle of the key. And finishing it up.
That was nice.
That was a really, really good game, really great Villanova team. Michigan, hey, they earned their way there, man.
They went through the bracket.
You can't sneeze at it. They got hot at the right time of year, and it turned into a phenomenal season for them.
They definitely did. But getting back into our conversations, we're going to get to another break, but what would be too much – for you to give up, if you were Brandon Bean, or if you were the general manager of the Bills trying to get a quarterback, what's too much? What would you not want to give up to get up there to get a quarterback? That's really all we want to know.
I don't want to know what you would give.
Right, yeah. We want to know what you would not give up. And so you can tweet us. You can tweet me at DAJones19. You can tweet Steve today at
SteveTasker89.
But really, you can also tweet him at the John Murphy Show.
Yeah, Murphy Show. I'm watching Murph's Twitter feed today, and we're getting a lot of feedback on this because a lot of people say, "Well, here's how much I would give up," and so that means you wouldn't give up one more seventh rounder down the road. You know, next year's seventh rounder, and it's a tall order because there's so many things on the table: players, draft picks, positioning, years in the draft. You know, like a next year's three and then a 2023, that kind of thing. So. It's a lot to think about, and there's a lot of balls to keep in the air when you're trying to juggle these trade scenarios around. But I want to know what is too much. I mean, because that's where we're sitting right now. We've talked about this. The Bills are sitting at too much. Everything's too much.
Too much. That's why the trade hasn't gone down yet. But we're going to talk about that. On the other side of the break, we're also going to have Bruce Feldman, Fox Sports reporter, Sports Illustrated contributor, and author of The Making of a Modern Quarterback. So you know what's coming up. It's all quarterback talk. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run.
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White.
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show, hour two of the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones in with Steve Tasker. Murph is out on vacation on his way back from the game last night. We posed a question on Twitter, and we've been talking about this for the last hour. What would be too much for you if you were the GM of the Buffalo Bills right now, sitting there at number 12, and you're trying to make a trade with the Giants or whomever up there at the top of the draft, probably inside the top five, to get a quarterback that you want? What would be too much? What would you not want to give up to get up there? We're going to go to a call who's been sitting on the line for a little bit. Ed in Boston, New York. Ed, are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ed.
All right, guys. I wouldn't trade up at this cost that they're having right now. It seems way overpriced. I think they have a lot of holes to fill at linebacker in both sides of the line, defense and offense, and I would hold at 12.
Yeah, you wouldn't give up the 2 1s and the 2 2s.
No.
Okay.
Much. Those quarterbacks are unknowns. Are you better off with what you got?
What about the 2 1s and 1 2?
I wouldn't do it.
Okay. That's interesting.
Like the deal.
Yeah. All right. That's good. That's what we want to know. And that's not too much. And there are a lot of fans like Ed.
Mm-hmm.
The unknown is what scares them off.
Yeah.
And I get that for fans. And like you and me both, we said it. The unknown is what keeps us from saying, hey, throw everything at it. Because if it was Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers, or Drew Brees, or one of those guys, Tom Brady,
right.
You can go down the list. You kind of say, well, yeah, I'd give all six of those top three picks away.
Now,
you know, I'd give the 2 1s, the 2 2s, and the 2 3s for Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
and go.
Now, I mean, you look at those guys. You look at Drew Brees wasn't number one overall. He had question marks coming out of college.
And he had question. They were going to get rid of him because they were pretty sure he couldn't play
right
in San Diego.
And then when he got hurt, right?
He got his shoulder hurt right at the end of that year when he lit it up finally.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave the San Diego Chargers a chance because they had drafted Phillip Rivers, mm-hmm. same draft as Eli Manning.
Mm-hmm.
And Drew Brees didn't play all that well in San Diego. He kind of was like coasting along as having fun. And he's liking it. You know, he knew he was there. And then mm-hmm. they drafted Phillip Rivers, and Drew Brees turned into Drew Brees overnight.
Yeah, he was like,
I remember it. I covered it. And I've talked about it a lot publicly. When they drafted Phillip, they had to draft two number one quarterbacks to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And the one they drafted first was actually the guy, but he didn't turn into it until they thought that he was going to lose his job.
Yeah.
And then Drew Brees became Drew Brees and went on and became the Hall of Fame guy that he is. That's the truth. And I'll tell anybody that asks me that. He was not a good quarterback until they drafted somebody to replace him.
And that's what we're talking about when you talk about the unknown of a rookie coming into this league. And that's why people have pause for a guy like Josh Rosen, who you're like – you hear so many different things about him having different questions about whatever it is out there outside football. Now, I think the guy loves football, but you're going to question if he loves football if you keep hearing all of these different things. And if you're a guy, if you're a team that's about to take him and give him, not like you're giving him quarterback money that you used to give him before the new CBA, but you are talking about taking a guy in the first round, hoping that he's your franchise quarterback, and maybe 5 years from now he doesn't even care.
Yeah, the reason this stuff about Josh Rosen's out there is because Jim Moore, his college head coach, said, and I'm going to quote, I'm going to paraphrase, he mm-hmm. said, listen, the guy's a millennial.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to know, he needs to be challenged intellectually. He has a reputation of being the smartest guy in the room. He's one of those guys. That's kind of like Aaron Rodgers was when he came out, and he and Brett Favre did not get along because Aaron Rodgers didn't really like to be condescending. He didn't play those games. If he knew, he was going to say it. He didn't know if Brett, he'd care if Brett Favre knew it or not. So Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers aren't buddy-buddy.
Right.
Because Aaron didn't put up with this veteran quarterback who's a Hall of Fame. He didn't care. He was going to do his thing. So this is kind of what Josh Rosen, I'm getting from him. He's the smartest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have patience for guys who can't keep up intellectually. If you don't know what you're doing on the play, he's going to call you out. And he doesn't care if he embarrasses you or not. You need to keep up.
Yeah.
So there's some stuff going on around what Jim Moore said today about, and everybody's saying, well, he really killed it. He didn't kill that kid. He just said, this is how you got to push his buttons.
This is
his buttons you got to push.
This is what it is. And Josh Rosen probably knows that. Another guy who knows a little bit about some quarterbacks is Bruce Feldman, Fox Sports reporter, Sports Illustrated contributor, and also author of the book, The QB, The Making of Modern Quarterbacks. Bruce, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to be on with you guys.
You're on with Donald Jones and Steve Tasker. And, Bruce, I'm sure you heard us talking about Josh Rosen. And Josh Rosen, I think, is regarded as the best pure passer in this draft. The questions about him are obviously two things. It's the health with the concussions and shoulder and stuff like that. But it's also this stuff that you just heard Steve talking about and how, you know, he's the smartest guy in the room and he kind of turns people off. So what do you think about Josh Rosen?
You know, I think you guys hit on, to me, the biggest concern about him, which is the first one, which is it's not a toughness thing, but I think it's a durability thing.
Right.
He did have two documented concussions last year. I don't know how many he's actually maybe had that weren't documented or fall in the other category. He took a pounding at UCLA. I work for Fox Sports and cover games for them. And, you know, talked to a lot of coordinators, and one of the coordinators in the Pac-12 said, you know, we were going to test him. We blitzed him 46 times, and this guy said, after that, we don't question his toughness. He responded really well to it, but he has taken some shots there. I mean, he didn't have the kind of talent around him that Sam Darnold had. I think the things to keep in mind with Rosen are his personality is not going to be for everybody. I think there is an element of, I don't know if it's that he thinks he's smarter than everyone else. I don't think it's that. I think it's a little more of his just, his personality is just different than what you see typically from quarterbacks. Now, you guys, you know, mentioned Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is a little different than a lot of other guys, and sometimes that can come across as aloof and maybe or smug or you know, whatnot, or maybe it's a dry sense of humor, and I think Josh has that. I mean, I've known and been around him since he was a junior in high school. We were in, you know, he's from the same town I'm from. But I think there's that. I also think there's an element of he's had three different offensive coordinators and three different quarterback coaches in 3 years at UCLA. That wasn't a fault of his, but I just think that you're going to get a lot of opinion on him, and he's a very polarizing personality. But he is a really talented quarterback. When you talk to his teammates, which I think is important, they will tell you privately, and I've heard this from guys within the program that I know that swear by him and just said he is much more competitive and cares about football and cares about his teammates, you know, more than a lot of people who don't know him think he does.
Yeah, I think that's it's incredibly insightful. And even down to the point where you said, you know, it's not about durability, it's not about toughness, it's about durability. And, you know, Bills fans here in Buffalo have seen that happen before. We had a really tough quarterback in Rob Johnson who was still injured all the time. You can play with some pain. You can't play with injuries. And when you start talking about concussions and quarterbacks, it doesn't take you very long down the road to find out the guy may be the guy. He may be great, but if he can't stay on the field as a starter, you're in deep trouble. We want to talk to you a little bit. Bruce Feldman, of the quarterback, wrote the book, The Quarterback, The Making of a Modern Quarterback. Bruce, talk to us a little bit about the other guys. I mean, rank this class from top to bottom. I mean, you got Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, Mason Rudolph, all these guys. I mean, how good is this crew top to bottom? I mean, can you give us a thumbnail? How deep does it go? How good are these guys? How good could they be? What's the league going to look like if all these guys come in and you got six young quarterbacks that are starting for NFL teams? How likely is that?
Well, it's possible. I mean, we're obviously in a different era than that, you know, that great Elway class, you know, I guess it was 35 years ago.
Yeah, it was 83, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's different now. Guys are expected to play sooner. I think there is kind of something for everybody, but there, to me, there's nothing close to, like, you know, look, Andrew Luck hasn't gone close to a Super Bowl. I thought he was as close to a can't miss as we've seen come out of college in the last, you know, decade, but there are guys. To me, Sam Darnold has the lowest bust factor. He is very athletic. Teammates love him. Anticipates well. Makes plays. The thing that gives me a little pause with him is he turns it over. You know, he can be sloppy with the football, and hopefully that kind of thing can get coached out of him. You know, he struggled a little bit more this year than he did last year. I think some of that was teams adjusted to him. And the other part was he broke in a largely new group of receivers, so I think the timing was shaky and a little bit of that. But I think if you're asking me who's the safest pick of the quarterbacks, I would say him. The two wild cards to me, like, I think Josh Rosen is the most talented passer. You watch him. Like, a couple of years ago, I was at a Thursday night game. It was UCLA against Cal, and Josh was a true freshman. And you know, there was a ton of NFL decision makers there at the Rose Bowl. Jared Goff was in that game. I think Josh is more talented than Jared Goff, who was obviously the first pick in the draft. I think there are some similarities to them a little bit. You know, neither guy is Ben Roethlisberger in terms of stature, but they're both, you know, Josh Rosen 6'4", 225. It's not like he's a small guy and he just turned 21. But I think just really good passers, good feel for the pocket, underrated athletically. Again, I just think there may be a little bit personality may not sit well with everybody, but I think I'd be surprised if he was a big disappointment. I just think that he's too talented not to, depending on the system he gets in, I think he will do well. Josh Allen, to me, gives me some pause because, yeah, he has the biggest arm. Yes, he's the biggest of these guys, and he's athletic. But when he played this last, first of all, he played at a lower level of FBS football. And people can say, well, the talent around him wasn't very good at Wyoming. Well, 2 years ago in 2016, he actually had pretty good talent. Four of the guys on his offense played in the NFL last year. This year it wasn't good. But even, you know, at the level, when the only times he went up and played against, you know, Power 5 programs, it wasn't like he played against the Alabamas of Power 5. he and that team struggled mightily. I mean, the accuracy, the lack of touch. I mean, to me, he's a big work in progress. I would be more skittish of him as a top five pick than any than Darnold or Rosen or even Baker Mayfield. You know, we did a bunch of Baker Mayfield's games. I think he could be terrific. You know, he's another one that has a polarizing personality, but he makes plays. He is very good on the move, and I just think when the lights come on, he responds well to pressure, and he will. His confidence level is at a different level than these other guys. And then the fifth one to me who might get in the first round is Lamar, who's the best athlete. He's probably the most raw in terms of what you're getting and in there. I mean, I would put Josh Allen in that same boat. I don't know. You know, some of these other guys, I think system fit and who's going to like him is critical, because I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be gun-shy on Lamar, but he's also a guy, unlike the other guys, where I could see him being a situational weapon for the right team early on as he continues to develop as a red zone guy, as a two-point play potentially guy, and some trick plays and different kinds of things. But he's going to, you know, need to be developed probably in a way that more so than Darnold and Rosen and even Baker, I think, need to be brought along.
You know, we're speaking to Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports. Bruce, when you talk about Lamar Jackson, now the Bills are sitting at number 12, and we've been talking all day about possibly not being able to get up there into the top five to get one of those guys. It's going to take a lot. And when you talk about Lamar Jackson, he could be one of those guys that's still on the board at number 12. The Bills could even pass him there. He might still be on the board at 22 when the Bills draft there. Now, do you think that's all he is? Because you talk to some people and they say, look, the guy can actually throw the ball. He makes a lot of plays with his legs, but he can throw the ball, and he is a quarterback. When you look at the Eagles offense and that RPO type of offense, I think we're going to see a lot more of that. We've been seeing it for years. It's now really coming to light. But I think you're starting to see these NFL offenses kind to adapt that college style. And so he could fit into a system like that.
He could. I, you know, I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, he's only a receiver. People are dinging him for how, you know, his size. I mean, he just also turned 21. He's not a small guy. I mean, he's not Cam Newton or Ben Roethlisberger. But how many guys in the NFL who start are that size? Yeah, he's going to take some shots, but there's a couple of points that I think need to be made about him. First, 2 years ago when he won the Heisman, when they played Clemson, and the other guy on the other field, who now a lot of people love in the NFL, and I can see why, Deshaun Watson wasn't the best player on the field. Lamar Jackson was. It wasn't even close. Also, Lamar Jackson had receivers who dropped passes left and right in 2016, and it barely slowed him down, which for a young quarterback, I think that's a pretty key point, because a lot of guys would struggle to get into a rhythm or hang their heads, and he never seemed to do that. He just kept making plays. He did not have, like, you can go back and watch the bowl game they played in when LSU kind of destroyed them. It was right after, you know, it was a couple of games after Houston did, and you kind of saw how shaky the offensive line around him was. And then again, this is a guy who won the Heisman. I just think he's, you know, he's a remarkable talent. You know, he was coached by Bobby Petrino, who's not exactly the easiest person to play for. So I think that, you know, will show, you know, kind of, I think, some of his football character, that he was able to respond to that, especially in his development. So if he goes to a situation where I think they are patient with him and don't throw him out there in bad situations and continue to develop him, I mean, I think he's a really intriguing talent, and it's just a matter of, you know, to me, fit here is critical. But I think he could be pretty special, because you just don't see a lot of guys with the tools he has at that level, especially as the game, as you just mentioned, is kind of drifted some to a lot of the college elements.
So this is, you know, it's interesting to me that you say that, and you're comparing him to a guy like Deshaun Watson, who came out last year and as a rookie played extremely well and was leading the number one offense in the NFL for the Houston Texans before he got hurt in the first half of the season. I mean, they're scoring 30 points a game, and Deshaun Watson was playing extremely well. And you're saying in the head-to-head matchup that Lamar Jackson was significantly better, at least in college, in the game that they played against each other. And that's got to be something that other people see as well. Do you think there's any chance that a lot of teams are maybe smokescreening their opportunity to maybe get Lamar Jackson to fall to them?
Yeah, it's possible, because I think people can look at the skill set he has. I mean, to me, you know, like, he and Deshaun, I don't think the only thing they real commonality with them is they both played in the ACC, so you see a lot of the same opponents. You know, Deshaun's personality is very steady. It's almost like you're dealing with like a 35-year-old man in terms of his maturity. And Deshaun's a pretty good athlete, whereas Lamar is a freaky athlete. You know, I guess size-wise, they're relatively comparable. But I think what you look at is, and again, the ship sailed on this because Andy Reid's got Pat Mahomes. But there are certain guys where I'd say, oh, I could see this guy looking at this kid and saying, man, there's a lot we could do with him down the road. You know, if we can get him to be a little more consistent as a passer and kind of get a better sense of what we want to do offensively, just because his skill set is intriguing. Whereas, you know, we mentioned Mason Rudolph, you know, a couple of minutes ago. You know, we did a bunch of Oklahoma State games. Mason had a ton of talent around him, probably the best receiving core in the country, really good group of young running backs. In a conference, his defense is pretty suspect. You know, I mean, I don't know. Could Mason be, you know, Andy Dalton at the top end of his development? I don't know. But I think where you look at Lamar, I think you see, man, there's some intriguing potential here where he can help you, whether he's going to turn out to be, you know, a 10-year starter in the NFL and go to Pro Bowls. I don't know. But I think there's a lot of stuff he can do. It's just, do you take that guy as kind of an X-factor quarterback and see where he's going to develop? How high do you go for that? Do you take him at 22? Maybe. I don't know if you take him in the top 10 unless, you know, you got to have everybody in the room sold on it and feel like you have a system that, you know, you can get him on board with right away, because I think there's going to be a lot of ups and downs with him, probably more so than some of these other, than certainly Darnold, and I think even maybe Baker.
We're joined by Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports, Sports Illustrated contributor, and also the author of The QB, The Making of Modern Quarterbacks. We're talking about quarterback here. Everyone here, Bruce, in Buffalo, I mean, that's really all people want to talk about is the quarterback position. You wrote a book, The Making of the Modern Quarterback. So talk to us a little bit about that book.
Yeah, it was really about how this business of developing quarterbacks has grown so much. Everywhere you see these private quarterback coaches have sprung up. And I think what's interesting now, going back to, you know, even 10 years ago, like when guys were getting ready for the draft, it's like now all of a sudden they all have their guys who are scripting things for their pro days and how it's developed. So I focused in on that side of it at the beginning, and then you started to see how guys, even at the top level, to me, Aaron Rodgers is as talented a guy playing quarterback as we've seen in a long, long time. And I had spent some time around Aaron, and one of the things, you know, he had told me was how when he got to the NFL, you know, it's not like Brett Favre was like, hey, come on in, I'm going to mentor you. You know, Aaron Rodgers, who's gifted enough physically but also mentally, was able to study Brett Favre and do all this stuff. You know, he told me that he would see Brett Favre do, and he would use, you know, Friday's practices where he's on scout team as kind of like his, you know, his way to rewire his brain to do some crazy stuff. And it may not have been the best interest of the Packers defensive staff, but he was like, hey, I'm gonna work on this. And he was able to implement it and develop it. And I think there's, you know, for a lot of people, what he does with all these crazy off-platform throws and everything, and there's a whole generation of quarterbacks. You know, if you ask a short quarterback, whether it's Johnny Manziel or Baker Mayfield or whoever, you know, maybe they'll say Russell Wilson, but they're probably going to say Drew Brees. But most quarterbacks, you know, the younger generation quarterbacks come up, Aaron Rodgers is the guy, you know, because of some of those crazy throws. Yeah, you'll maybe hear some Tom Brady because he won all the Super Bowls and everything, but all that stuff. And so it's really about how the process of defining quarterbacks and developing was something I really wanted to get at, and was fortunate to be able to kind of get a front row seat with a lot of the top quarterbacks and quarterback developers in the business now.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because you had this book, and I want to ask you one thing. That we've got an A.J. McCarron here, who won two national championships with Alabama. And then also on the quarterback scene is Johnny Manziel trying to bounce around. I mean, can you kind of compare and contrast? Obviously, Johnny Manziel is not in the NFL, but he's kind of a guy who's trying to get back in. And A.J. McCarron, who has been in the NFL but not had a chance to get back in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, can you think back to how they were evaluated when they came out and what has ultimately been proven in their career, if anything?
Well, I think you had guys who came in completely different systems. Obviously, one had the Nick Saban system where, you know what, whatever quarterback, and A.J. McCarron's probably, you look at was whether it's Greg McElroy or John Parker Wilson or, you know, it's kind of a random collection of people who, you know, it's not like none of them have been stars in the NFL. Whereas Johnny Manziel was at Texas A&M, Kevin Sumlin kind of was able, along with Cliff Kingsbury, to have an environment where he flourished, but it was kind of fly by the seat of your pants at times. And, you know, for people who read the book, there's a lot of Johnny Manziel in there. It was kind of this crazy roller coaster ride to the draft that year. And I thought, you know, this could be spectacular failure, which, there was an NFL personnel person I interviewed for the book who actually kind of talked about that with Johnny. It was like, you know, a lot of people focus on the drinking, but it's actually the drug part and all this other stuff that gives me the biggest concerns. And everything that guy said in the book turned out to be true. So now Johnny has bounced back. You know, I had talked to him for about an hour the other day for a SI story, and he said because he's been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, he's now on medication and feels like that has kind of grounded him and given him perspective and an understanding of what he's dealing with. But he knows that it's going to be over the long haul because people have seen him okay for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, for 2 months, but then it's like, you know, there's a lot of skepticism there. And I think so it's going to, you know, who knows? He may have to go up to Canada for 2 years. I mean, he's in the spring league. I think that, you know, when you mention A.J. McCarron, the thing that I kind of circle back to in my mind was seeing them both at the Manning camp the year after Johnny won the Heisman. And they were both getting interviewed and they were buddies. And then all of a sudden the next day, Johnny goes AWOL. He and A.J. McCarron are roommates. You know, there's different sides of what happened there. And, you know, it just, you had a lot of guys who I think were kind of flying by the seat of their pants. And fortunately for McCarron, you know, he was in a structured system with Saban where they kept on winning and winning. And I think his personality fit within the system well enough. And we'll see if he gets a real chance to make a run at a starting job, what he can do. Obviously, he's had little bits of time, but you know, I think you have two guys who were kind of at one point larger than life living as SEC quarterbacks when certainly the SEC was by far and away on top of college football.
Bruce, I think A.J. McCarron is going to get a shot here to be a starter regardless of what the Bills do here in the draft, if they go first round, whatever it is. I think he's going to get a legit shot. I think Johnny Manziel will have to go up to Canada and play for a year and show that he can actually play football up there, but also show that he can keep his head on straight up there if he starts to become a star up right there in Canada. I think right that would be big for him. But I just got to go back to one thing before we let you go, Bruce. The thought of Aaron Rodgers on the practice squad or just on scout team is crazy to me. You know, because you don't get these superstar Hall of Fame guys talking about being on scout team. It's like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady at one point in their careers both on a scout team. It's like crazy to me.
We all start
somewhere. Yeah, well, I mean, we're talking about guys. I think it shows you how kind of fickle it is that, you know, who turns out to be a star and who doesn't, you know? I mean, I was shocked that Aaron fell as much as he did in that draft, mm-hmm. whatever, 23rd. You know, but then again, this is a guy who had no offers out of high school. He had the grades to go, and he was just short, and he was a late developer, and you know, obviously Tom Brady was whatever, the 199th pick. It's just a crazy business of things. I'm sure you guys have both been on the field with guys who had amazing talent for one reason or another. It didn't translate to production or, you know, they didn't have the maturity or the structure around it or whatever. And so I think, and it's harder in this day and age too, I think, with younger players because through social media, they get, you know, their heads get blown up and they get, their perspective's all out of whack, and people tell them how great they are after one game and everything like that. And look, I'm guilty of it in the media because I'm part of the process too.
Right.
I mean, it's a fascinating thing to see in the middle of, but it doesn't always work out for a lot of the guys in the middle of it.
Bruce, we want to thank you for joining us. Before we let you go, where can people go to get your book, The QB, The Making of Modern Quarterbacks?
The easiest place is just to go to Amazon.com and search for Bruce Feldman and for The QB. I appreciate talking to you guys. It was fun to chat about some quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks,
it's always
Bruce.
Fun. It's all we talk about up here, but thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right. Bruce Feldman, Fox Sports reporter. Also a contributor on Sports Illustrated and author of The QB, The Making of a Modern Quarterback. We're going to get to a break. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about some crazy workouts. I don't know, Steve. I mean, when you came in, guys weren't even working out yet. They were just playing. They were just lacing them up and playing football.
I'm about never working out.
My time, we were getting into some crazy stuff. So we're going to talk about some Aaron Donald stuff that we saw over the weekend. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones, Steve Tasker, in for Murph, who's traveling back for the game. You know, Steve, over the weekend, while I was fighting centipedes with my son, and going to the park playing basketball with him, I saw this workout, Aaron Donald.
I saw that too.
And he's working on his hands, but the guy who he's working with, his trainer, has these.
He's got arm pads on.
Yeah. I mean, he has arm pads on. Like, he's not the one with the knives in his hands.
He's got knives in his hand. The trainer is holding knives in his hands and, like stabbing at Ray Donald, and Ray Donald is, like, blocking him with, like, Aaron Donald.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some crazy workouts, and I remember we used to work out with Marines and guys like that. And first of all, I wonder if the knives were even real in the video. You know, who's doing that?
Listen, that is a total stunt.
Yeah, that's
it's a total
crazy
publicity stunt. I mean, I don't know who the good trainer is. He's getting more out of this than Aaron Donald is.
True, he is. I can't see many guys saying, yeah, I'm going to go train.
That's dumb.
Train with some knives. It's just stupid.
Who comes up with that?
I don't understand.
How does that make you better than not having knives in your hand?
Exactly. I mean, we could work on our hands with a lot of different things that actually kill me if you
like every other player in the history of the NFL has always worked their hands without knives.
Without knives. Guys do some crazy stuff, and James Harrison.
It's publicity.
It is publicity. James Harrison is another one. He's done some crazy workouts, and he's like 50, but we've seen him, you know, working out, just doing crazy stuff, pulling trucks and planes, and playing volleyball with medicine balls, and pushing a sled with a million pounds on it.
It's the strongest man stuff that they do, you know, and the acupuncture and stuff. We were talking about this beforehand. I got drafted the National Football League in 1985,
mm-hmm.
which was back then was the tail end, was the last part of an era when the old guys that I came into the league with, guys that are going to the Hall of Fame, like Robert Brazil is going to the Hall of Fame now. His last training camp was my first training camp.
Right.
He did not make that team that year.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's going to the Hall of Fame, you know, 30 years later. So back then, the old guys had come into the league, and that nobody was making any money, or not enough money, that they didn't have to have a second job in the off season. You had guys selling cars, guys selling insurance, guys working construction, guys doing whatever.
I can't imagine.
I can't
imagine LeSean McCoy delivering your mail.
Right.
Working for the post office.
Right. He's a postal worker or working for UPS or, you know, right? So nobody was making enough money. So they had guys doing it. And I remember, and I was telling you the story, the trainer, the Hall of Fame trainer here in Buffalo, Ed Abramowski, told me a story about one of the players back in the 60s and what he did. He was working at a car dealership back then. And during his – he didn't have time to train because he's working 8 hours a day. So he would go on his lunch hour and start and run 40-yard dashes.
Mm-hmm.
And he would run 10 40-yard dashes during his lunch hour. And during this course of the summer or the off season, he shortened the time between each 40-yard dash. So it would go from 30 seconds down to 25 seconds. He'd do that for three weeks. And then he'd drop it to 20 seconds and do that for 3 weeks. Then he'd drop it to 15 seconds between 10s or 40s. And then drop it to 10 seconds between 40s. You know, so, and when he got back to training camp, A.B. told us, the coaches at that time, I don't even know who it was way back, and they said, man, he's in phenomenal shape. Wow, he's in great shape. And all the guy did was run 10 40s a day.
Exactly.
I'm like, bro.
That's all he did.
It's a different world now because you've got guys doing core training. And now it's core training and stuff. Even when I was playing, we went over to one of the gymnastics centers here in town in Buffalo, and we go in and jump in their foam pit. You know, they have those foam pits where they spotter. You go in, stand there, waist deep, and just jump up and down. And, man, I'm telling you what. It sucked the life out of you.
Yeah.
So you did all these different things, trying to train your core, trying to find different ways of doing it. And during my career is when finally, too, strength and conditioning coaches became not just a part of the staff. They were the heartbeat in the offseason.
Now, I mean, like you said, when you were playing, obviously you guys weren't making nearly as much money as what these guys are making now.
No, but you could make year-round money. You could make money so you could make it to the next season. You became a professional athlete, part-time.
Exactly. Now these guys are making so much money where, like, I just read something that said something like LeBron spends $1 million a year on his body. That's training, that's food, all of it, right? He spends $1 million a year. Now, I remember I had three different trainers, and I would work out in the morning. I did my weights and stuff in the morning. Then I do yoga or whatever the case may be, Pilates.
Right, right.
And then I go running in the late afternoon when it was really, really hot. And so you have a lot of guys that are like that. And I remember seeing Reggie Bush was early in his career. He was doing this crazy workout on the treadmill with the trainer where he was like rolling on the treadmill, doing all types of stuff. Right. And you see some crazy stuff out there. But guys now have the money to pay for it. It's a write-off. But they have the money to pay for it. Or they have five different trainers. But the whole thing with the knives is just – That's just
crazy.
Ridiculous.
That's crazy talk. And then, you know, you go back in time, too, and when Romanowski was doing it, he would get into a hyperbaric chamber. He bought his own hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of you who don't know, it's an oxygen-rich environment that enhances your body's ability to react to, rebound off of after hits. So he'd get home from an away game, go get in the hyperbaric chamber for a period of time, then get up. This is before he goes to bed that night. Get up, get a chiropractic adjustment. For all his joints, make sure his spine was aligned and all his joints were in place. And then he would also get a massage. And this was all before he went to sleep after a game. And this, of course, you know, you're spending a couple hundred grand a year to make that happen. But when a guy's making $7 million a year, it's a business investment that they seem worth. And if it extends their career, certainly it is worth it.
I mean, we talked to Lorenzo. Lorenzo has like four or five different trainers right now.
Right?
He does a bunch of different things. And the older you get, You do start to really pay attention. When I was – I mean, I played 3 years here, and I worked out three different times, but I wasn't a guy who was doing acupuncture. I wasn't a guy who was doing the hot tubs, the cold tubs, all of that stuff.
Right.
You couldn't pay me to get into a cold tub.
Right.
You know, I mean, when it got cold here, I didn't even drink water in practice. I was like, bring me some hot chocolate or something
like that.
I don't want anything cold. And guys were going that hot, cold, contrast type of thing. You get in the hot tub for 3 minutes or 5 minutes, then get in the cold tub, and then go back and forth, back and forth. And I'm just standing in the hot tub just trying to warm my body up from being outside at practice. You know, so you are seeing it change now where guys are more and more, the younger guys are, they are paying attention to this a lot more and taking care of their bodies, paying attention to what they're eating, which is huge, and what guys are eating. You see guys trying different diets and all of this stuff so that they can lose weight, or it's just a lot more protein, or it's a lot more carbs, whatever the case may be. Guys are trying a lot more than they used to.
And a lot of it comes down to, obviously, the money changes everything.
Right.
The guys are making a ton, and that's what changed it in my era, before guys, they didn't have part-time jobs, and they could work out in the offseason.
Right.
You know, start back all the way back up in February, March, start getting ready for the next season, getting better and better and better, getting bigger, getting stronger, getting faster. And then also the thing that also changes it for a lot of people is they're getting a lot, in my opinion, they're getting a lot better coaching and a lot better guidance earlier in their careers, like in college. Mm-hmm. Particularly guys like at the major college, the SEC schools and the Big Ten schools, the Pac-12 schools, the Big 12, all these major college conferences, their budget is such that, and their knowledge is such that they're bringing in great trainers and great nutritionists, and they're getting these guys started at a much earlier age as well. So they come in knowing a lot more about what it takes to play at a higher level than the guys did in my day. I mean, you come out, I mean, we lifted weights and ran, and that's all we did.
And I remember, and this is no knock on anyone that was here, because we had it in place, but it wasn't as strict as it was. When I left here and went to New England, the nutrition program that they had and the nutritionist that they had, he was a former Navy SEAL. And he had this whole workup on everybody. And depending on if you needed to lose weight, if you needed to gain weight, if you had a certain illness like I did, I mean, he had a diet for everybody. And you had to stick to that diet. I mean, it was on a whole nother level. And just the money that, as you're talking about the budgets, just the money that you see going into college football budgets, basketball, whatever it is, and now here at the pro level, it's a lot of money going into different things, different workouts. Yoga and Pilates, you see it every week during the season. These guys, they have chiropractors coming in, working. They're the coaches and the players. They're all getting worked over. You know, they all have their nutrition program. I mean, it's serious now because you got to be able to last throughout the year. And you got to do the right stuff on the field, training-wise, and then the right stuff putting whatever in your body. But it's just so different now.
When it also comes down to this, I mean, you got guys now, and we've seen it. Lorenzo Alexander here with the Bills is a great example. He was a 300-pounder.
Oh, yeah.
And dropped a ton, you know, a tenth of a ton. Mm-hmm. You know, he dropped a lot of – transformed his body. He looks like a different person.
Right.
And any of you out there, you're like me. Have you ever tried to think about transforming yourself, what it would take?
Man.
I mean, it's like all that's – it's hard to do. Even, you know, forget about having the money to do it. You know, the desire to do it. No, I don't want to give up popcorn pizza and, you know, ice cream. You know, I don't want to live like that. So you get guys that will do that, and – it gives you an idea of the professionalism and the commitment they have to their craft. And also, you talk about, you know, the NFL and how it is at New England and how it is at other and here and other places. Mm-hmm. There is no salary cap outside the lines.
Oh, no.
The only salary cap applies to the players. Mm-hmm. So they can hire Navy SEALs to be nutritionists. They can hire yoga instructors. They can hire masseuse. They can hire chiropractors. They can have on-staff doctors. They can have an internist, an orthopedic, and a surgeon.
Yeah.
You know, an orthopedic, whatever you want, and a neurologist.
Right.
They can have all these guys on staff. They can have 50 coaches. They can have, you know, 60 assistants. Mm-hmm. They can, whatever you want. There is no budget. And it comes down to what ownership and what the coaching staff and the program they have installed, what they ask the owners for and what the owner's willing to give them and how and can they sell it as being important.
Right.
And there's no limit to what they can spend on this stuff. I mean, we're sitting inside a building that was, you know, inside this field house here at One Bills Drive. You know, are you kidding me? There was a time in the league when that was – you don't build barns like this.
No.
Yeah, an indoor practice. They could hold an NFL game in this building.
Yeah.
Easy.
Mm-hmm.
And
they just,
you could punt, kick, everything
in. They just redid the entire thing.
Yeah.
They just redid the entire thing. Classrooms, field,
if the
training room.
I guess the point is the coaching staff and when they hire these guys, the general manager and the coaches, all they got to do is convince ownership that it's important. And there ain't no budget.
Yeah.
And this is the first place you see it is when the player, the way they treat these players, the way they have their, you know, their, where they have them eat, how they have them train, how much time they ask of them, what the commitment is. And it all comes down to the player as to how good they can be.
All right. Well, we're going to continue this conversation once we get back from break.
Nobody's going to be training with knives, though.
No, we're definitely not training with knives. But our producer, Jay Harris, said he wanted to do something like that. And George.
Yeah.
But when we come back, we're going to talk about this. And we're going to get back into our Twitter discussion. What would be too much if you were the GM trying to get a quarterback and have to trade up? What would be too much? If you want to join in, 803-0550, outside Buffalo, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. We're going to get back to the calls. You can tweet us. It's the John Murphy Show, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones, Steve Tasker. Steve, we're getting a lot of feedback on Twitter about our question. If you were the GM and you're the GM of the Buffalo Bills right now, needing a QB, you need to get inside the top five. You're sitting at number 12. What is too much to give up? We're getting a lot on Twitter. We're getting a lot on the lines as well. So we're going to go to our first call. This is John in Lockport. John, are you there?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I got two things. But first, I want to talk about the Aaron Donald thing. I think that guy's just dumb. I mean, why risk, you know, getting stabbed?
Well, how much of a risk is it if the guy's using plastic knives? But, I mean...
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't know they were plastic. I thought they
we don't know if they're plastic either. I'm just saying that. Go ahead, John.
Sorry about that, guys. But I also wanted to say, I think giving away pretty much our whole draft this year would be giving away too much. I think I got a good scenario. I think if you swap our 12th pick with whoever we're going to trade up, give our other first-round pick away, only 1 second, 1 third, and 1 fourth. I mean 1 third, and then give up also next year's 1 second and 1 third. And that way you'll still have one pick in every round this year, and you're also still giving up quite a bit of picks. So it's not just giving a ball on this year. So you can fill some holes this year, you get your quarterback, and you're not auctioning off everything this year.
Well, you're talking about 6 draft picks to get up to the number 6 pick, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's – yeah, I don't know if you're going to get it done. You might. That's a pretty good package. But I don't know if you – here's the problem. 6 might not be high enough. And if the 6 ain't high enough, now you're stuck with giving away draft picks and not having enough draft picks to build a team around whoever you're going to build around. 6 is not high enough to get the quarterback you want. You're not going to get Josh Allen or Josh Rosen. You're not going to get Sam Darnold. And you probably won't get Josh Allen or – whoever else it is,
Baker Mayfield.
So you may get into the 6 spot. The 6 is not going to be high enough.
We're going to go to another call. This is Shane in Rochester, and he's kind of on the lines that we're hearing some fans now, and that's stay at number 12. Shane, what do you have to say?
I've been listening to you guys for a while, and I'd say about half an hour, 45 minutes ago, you guys were talking about A.J. McCarron and the new quarterback and how the experience that he has. I feel like we should just stick with him for a season and use the draft picks we have, because we have – it's a very deep draft class for us. We have a lot of picks this year. We can pick up a lot of talent. And I feel like if we do that, even if, you know, A.J. McCarron is not the best quarterback, from what I've seen of him, he looks like he would be good enough to at least give us a winning season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing to think about. I mean, a lot of teams are going that route, because even if you do get the quarterback of your choice in this draft, there are no guarantees that the guy's going to be any good,
right,
or good enough, or any better than A.J. McCarron, or even any better than Tyrod Taylor, or any better than any other quarterback you wish you had or didn't have. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said about sticking pat with all these picks that you've accumulated. The question is this as well, though. You get down to pick 56, get down to pick 95, you get down to pick 65, 53, 22. Are those guys going to pan out too? What if you miss on pick 22 and 56? You know, you got 11, you got 2 starters, you got the 12th pick who's a starter, and the 53rd pick who ends up being a starter, but the 22nd pick and the 56th pick and the 65th pick, they're just okay guys. They're just, you know, they turn into special team players. You know, it's a bust. Then you waste those picks. You could have given them, you know. So there's no guarantee that those 6 picks that you have there are going to be any better than the quarterback you trade up to get.
Right.
Or worse, or whatever. So just because they come further down the line doesn't mean they're going to be worth it either.
You know, I guess the flip side to that argument would be, well, at least you have more opportunities to miss than to trade them all away and miss on one guy. That would be the argument to that. But, you know, going back to this Aaron Donald thing, and if we could bring the video back up.
I'm having a hard time with this.
And I'm going to tell you why I'm having a hard
time
with this.
Let's hear it.
When you watch the video, it's 2 things. When you watch the video, and if you're watching on MSG, we have it up right now. If not, you can YouTube it. First of all, the knives that the coach has in his hand, I don't even see anything shiny or anything that. They're like really dull. They're not shiny. They look real.
Like sticks.
Right. They don't look real at all.
I'm not saying that they are, even if they are.
But then the last one, the last swipe, he kind of goes at Aaron Donald's ear, and Aaron Donald would be dead. I mean, he's right at his head. He would have been dead. He missed him, you know. So
he knows, too. Can you imagine what Aaron Donald would do to that guy if he hit stabbed him in the ear?
That's what I'm saying. Gosh. I mean, this has to be a total
he wouldn't be wearing those arm pads on his arms, I'll tell you that.
Right, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
No, that's just some crazy Unreal stuff. But listen, we're going to get to another break here, and we're going to get back into this. We got a lot of calls up there. What would you do, or what would be too much to give up if you are the GM of the Buffalo Bills to get up there, get a quarterback? We're going to talk about the Gronk possibly being traded, Marquette King. I mean, we got a lot of things. Marquette King, the punter, was released by the Oakland Raiders reportedly because of his personality. We got a lot to talk about. It's the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run.
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White.
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy, much to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome into the third and final hour of the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones, Steve Tasker, sitting in for Murph. And Steve, I want to get back into the QB discussion. I want to get to the lines, and we're going to get to the lines as we posted the question, what would be too much for the Bills to give up? If you were the GM, what would be too much for you to give up in terms of a trade to get up there to get the quarterback that you want? So if you want to join in on the conversation, you can call us at 803-0550 outside Buffalo 1-888-550-2550, or you can tweet in your responses. We've been getting a lot of different feedback on this going both ways, and we're going to get into the phone lines. But Steve, I want to talk to you about some other things around the league.
All right, before
we get into that. All right. First thing, these rumors that the Patriots are going to be shopping Gronk and possibly trading Gronk, and Gronk is having, you know, I guess difference of opinion, or
he's just disgruntled.
Exactly. He and Bill Belichick are not seeing eye to eye right now. Do you think the Patriots will trade Gronk? I don't think that that will happen. I don't think Tom Brady will let that happen because he's just too much of a safety net for Tom Brady.
Yeah, as much as we'd like to think so, I don't think Tom Brady has a voice in that conversation.
That could be true.
That might be the only great quarterback of Tom Brady's caliber who doesn't have a voice in that meeting. I know there's nobody on the New England roster that's above being traded.
Right.
Gronk included.
Brady,
I don't care
included.
Who it is.
I mean,
Brady included.
Brady just
that was the
he
whole
just dodged that because of the owner.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was already going to happen. So you think Gronk's tradable? Brady's tradable. They were going to – that's what that whole Sports Illustrated flap last year about between ownership and Belichick and Brady, that's where it came from. The time had come for them to move on from Tom Brady, in my opinion, and Belichick saw it. He knew what he had in Garoppolo, knows how good Garoppolo was, and he said, well, it's time for make the move. And Robert Kraft said, uh-uh.
I think it's gonna
you're, not trading, you're not trading my boy. And that's basically what it came down to.
You're not trading my son.
So you're telling me now Gronk – there are people
right,
trying to say
right,
Gronk,
right.
Gronk will be out of there as soon as they get something they want.
The question is, what is that? I mean, for Gronk, a guy who's had
who's been
the best tight end but has so many injuries.
And who – and what point in his career would he be worth more than he's worth right now?
True. Because it's only going to – Stayed healthy all last year. It's only going to go downhill now.
That's right.
You could be right. You could see him get traded on draft night.
And the word has – the rumor mill that the internet is these days, Gronk's kind of tired of being in that grist mill over there, with the nose of the grindstone 12 months a year, 7 days a week. He wants to, be in a program where he can take a deep breath once in a while, and I get it. I mean, it's hard to do, particularly when he's been grinding like that for a lot of years. So,
It's crazy because obviously Gronk got drafted there. That's all he's known since going into the league. I had a chance to speak to Stephon Gilmore about a month and a half ago. And I'm like, how are things up there? I know because I was up there, and I'm like, what was the biggest difference? And he was like, man, it's just an everyday grind. It's just different. It's an everyday grind, whether you're working out, whether you're in the meeting rooms, practice. I mean, they practice outdoors all the time. And practice, it could be, even if you're outside and it's sunny, or even if you're indoors, Bill Belichick is bringing in grease balls. You know, he's dropping the balls in buckets of water. I mean, he every day wants to make it hard for those players so that on game day it's just like, whatever, it's another day.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's just a constant grind. You never really can settle down. And that's the type of atmosphere that Bill Belichick wants.
And there's also guys coming out of the owners' meeting down in Florida. There was an article on today that said there are two teams going to throw offers at the Patriots thinking that this could happen with Gronk. So they're going to have to entertain offers. Well, whether they hang up the phone or whether they say yeah or make counter offers or all that, but there's no question teams are getting the idea that because Gronk is expressing some unhappiness that they may be able to pry him out of New England. There's a lot of teams. I mean, what other team would not want a guy like Gronkowski on their
team?
I'm
telling you. He could change your offense. If he's healthy, he will change your offense. I think he needs to go somewhere, though, where he's not the only piece of that offense. He just had too many injuries, you know, and if you put him in to where he's the number one receiver, you're giving him the ball all the time, you could be looking at you just gave up some whatever, draft picks or whatever, to get a guy who didn't finish the season for you, as great as he is. Another thing that I wanted to talk to you about was the Raiders released Marquette King, the punter, who for me, Marquette King is at the very least top five punters in the game. I think he's top three, probably. He might be the best one.
He's top two. He was second in the league in gross in net punting this year, and it was like 42 point something something. When I was playing, nobody was above 40. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was like the holy grail. Now you got guys on a whole bunch of guys. So it's getting better and better. And Marquette King is maybe the biggest leg in the league. Right. He's got a big, big leg. He can punt you out of trouble. And he was getting paid like it. I mean, he was, they're going to save $3.5 million or something on the cap this year. I think that has as much to do with it as anything that Marquette King. But when John Gruden taking over, I don't think there's any question that they've got their eyes set on, they're not upgrading that spot.
Oh, no.
They're not getting a better. They are not going to find a better punter than Marquette King. That's a money move.
So you don't think it had anything to do with the personality, which is what the reports were, that he didn't like his personality. But then you ask yourself, well, you can't even really speak to the players right now.
Right. Well, I don't know.
Dancing
and doing all
that
personality
stuff.
Or not. It could be with John Gruden. You don't know. I mean, he's back in the league and all that. But I think more so than anything, it's a money deal for now. Otherwise, they would have just – or maybe they did. Maybe we don't have the whole story. Maybe the Raiders went to Marquette and said, listen, we're going to redo your deal. We either cut you or release you. And Marquette would then say, no, you're going to cut me because I'm going to get whatever I want from – I'm the best punter in the league.
Yeah.
And there's somebody out there that's going to pay me.
I mean, John Gruden should just give him some of that $10 million a year he's making.
But, hey, he ain't under the cap.
Just go ahead and
coaches don't got no salary cap,
under the table real fast. Just go ahead and give him $1 million under the table. And then you don't even have to worry about the cap. You're making $10 million a year. You've been making at least $5 million for ESPN. I mean, come on. You were saying that John Gruden was that type of guy, though, right? Where he
– when he was at – what I remember about the Gruden era in Tampa Bay after he came over after 1 year, won the Super Bowl, he churned that roster. You know, we made a lot of big deal about Sean McDermott this year, churning the Bills around the bottom half. They got a lot of new players, churned it over, got their new culture going on. John Gruden did that every Tuesday.
Right.
Every Tuesday during the year, he had 8 guys, 10 guys working. He'd sign a new guy every Tuesday. And it was always an athletic upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's a better athlete here, better athlete there. It was kind of the old Raiders mentality. Bigger, stronger, faster is better.
Right.
Didn't matter what kind of skill set they had or what their numbers were, whatever. That's the guy they wanted. And that's what Gruden did when he was at Tampa Bay, and the players really got the idea that they were a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
They nobody even didn't know their name,
right?
Let alone their number or who they were, or did they care about them? Didn't know their wife was pregnant. Nobody cared.
Mm-hmm.
They just, and that was the atmosphere that I got the idea that Tampa Bay was under when Gruden was there, and that's why they weren't very successful. There was no cohesion. There was no sense of team. There was. It wasn't an atmosphere that was conducive to players playing for each other and digging deep when things went bad.
You know, to a certain extent, now I know New England is like that. I know also Seattle is like that. They churn the roster. Every week they're looking for somebody. Everybody brings guys in, but they don't sign them like that.
Yeah.
But the Patriots and the Seahawks do. But with this group and Sean McDermott, and you started to bring it up, as people talk about how much they're turning the roster at the bottom, I see that. It's like you get a certain, I don't know, it's like a deja vu or something. It's like you can see him working this thing like the old days, you know, and constantly bringing guys in. Because you see it here. Every week they're bringing guys in, and you get a new guy signed, a special teams guy, a new DB or something like
right.
that. If somebody goes down, of course, then they're going to bring somebody in to try to replace that position.
There's two things that always go on in that. You bring these guys in, and for people who don't know what we're talking about, during the National Football League season, every team – Tuesday's the day because the players are out. They'll bring street free agents, guys that are just out there mm-hmm. that they want to find out. They'll bring them in and work them out on a Tuesday. And mm-hmm. a lot of times it's not a big deal, but it's to get them a file on them, say, here's what we saw, here's what we liked. And here's the thing. To get them signed, there's two things that have to be in place. One, they got to be an athletic upgrade either on special teams and or have an upside at a regular down. If they bring this linebacker in, they say, well, we think this guy's going to be way good. Yeah. And like, if we can give him time to develop and get into our system, we think he's going to be way better than the guy we have now, mm-hmm. at least the guy backing up.
Right.
You know, so he's going to be better. And so there's got to be that and athletics mm-hmm. and money. It's right. got to be cheap.
Right.
He's cheaper. He's going to save us 1.5 on the cap. You know, he's got to do that. So if all three of those things are in place, if the guy's a better athlete, if he has an upside that's there and he's cheaper, they'll sign that guy on a Tuesday
right.
and put him on the roster. And a lot of times, you know, that it happens.
It happens.
It happens.
We've seen it this year. I mean, we've seen running backs come in. We've seen different guys come in and actually end up making plays
for
this team during the season.
And
in that week that they just got signed, a guy like Deontay Thompson gets signed and is playing the same week and comes in and makes big plays for the team. And I think that's something that Bills fans will probably need to get used to.
Well, I think fans around the league are going to get used to that. I think it's become more and more common. It's not just the Bills.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, at the end of the day, you're trying to find guys cheap anyway.
Yeah.
That guys that can come in and really make some plays for you. But back to our Twitter discussion.
As we
put out the question earlier, if you were the GM of the Bills, what would be too much in terms of what you want to give up in a trade to get up there to get one of those quarterbacks? We'll be getting a lot of different feedback on Twitter, on the phones. If you want to join the conversation on the line, you can call in 803-0550, outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. We got a lot of tweets. You got some tweets?
Yeah, I mean, one of the Nick texts in, anything more than the 12th pick, the number 56th pick, so that's a 1, a 2, and next year's 2, to get to number 5 is too much. And that to me means in his world, in Nick's world, you're going to stay at 12.
You're going to stay at 12.
You're going to stay at 12 because that deal's not going to get done. A 12, a 56, and next year's number 2.
Yeah,
you don't move at all. You're not getting anywhere. You won't get to the top 10. You won't go from 12 to 9 with that deal.
And that is,
maybe 12 to 7.
That's interesting because I'm telling you, we've been getting a lot of people that feel that way. And we got one call right now. And this is from Carmen and Kenmore, and Carmen believes the same thing. Carmen, you there?
Hey, yeah. Hey, how you guys
doing? Is it Carmine?
Good.
All right. Yeah, I agree. I think it's just too much to give up for what they're asking, you know, for all, what these teams want. I mean, we got so many draft picks. That's a lot of depth right there. And given just, the past history, well, 1 year anyway, last year, I mean, these guys had, to me, they had a solid draft last year. And with all these picks, I just have faith in these guys. Now, that's not to say that, you know, if they do give up a lot of draft picks, I'll trust them on that. I mean, you know, I'll take it either way because, you know, with Brandon Bean, I mean, you're just going to have to, you know, go with your gut instinct. But I would stay put. I mean, if it was me, because there's just too much to give up.
Yeah, it's a good note, Carmine. There is a line that's going to get too much, and that's really what our Twitter question was for today. I mean, there's got to be a line somewhere in the sand where you're just not going to go up that high. And a lot of people have said, listen, they'll give up this year's one, they'll give up these two first round picks, they'll give up a second and a third. And next year, some picks too. I mean, I think it comes down to how many picks are you willing to give up, starting with the top picks this year and going from there. You're going to give up the
12. You're
going to give up the 12 and 22,
right.
I think, is a given. But you can't give up those picks thinking, you know, that's going to give you any moves. I mean, I don't even think that'll get the Bills out of 12. I mean, it won't get them to 11. The Dolphins won't make those picks, that trade.
No.
And any of those teams up ahead of them all the way down, up through, nobody's going to make the pick for just two ones.
I don't
think. To flip to number 12.
It's hard for me to see people saying, all right, I'm going to move outside the top 10. That's my biggest thing. I'm going to move outside the top 10.
Even if it gives me the 12 and the 22, I ain't doing it.
I mean, the top 10, that's like prime real estate. It's like having a storefront on the throughway. You know, it's like, you don't give up that spot.
That's right.
And so it's hard for me to see that. We got another call, and this is Brian in Kansas who is on the other side of it. Brian, are you there?
Yeah, how we doing, guys?
Doing good.
Where are you?
I'm in Salina, Kansas, at my job right now.
Yeah,
go ahead. Yeah,
it's kind of hard for us to hear you, man.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Brian. What do you got?
Yeah, I think I got one question real quick, but to answer your guys' question on what is too much to give up, I think, you know, a premium pick, we're definitely going to have to give up two first. But if we give up a second and third this year, that's too much. Like, I have a scenario of both picks this year, first next year, and maybe someone like Shaq or Austin to move up to, like, the fourth or fifth spot because both of them teams need an edge rusher. And so that's your guys' question. But the question that I called in for was, what if we do go up and we get a rookie quarterback and then AJ, we have him for 2 years, and he just balls out. What do we do with AJ? I mean, do we trade him, or if he has like two phenomenal years? That's my question.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a good question. And you're right. I mean, 2-1s.
Brian in a horror movie.
Yeah, Brian's in a squeaky door factory.
Yeah.
His thing was he had a scenario where the 2-1s this year, a second and a third, he is as high as he would go.
Right.
And I agree with that. And then he's also the 2-1s. Or the 2-1s this year and a number one next year, plus a player like Shaq Lawson. And I agree. I mean, there's some players on the team that can get lost. But here's the thing. If A.J. McCarron comes in and has two phenomenal years, you trade whoever you just drafted.
Yeah.
I mean you don't jump ship just because you drafted this guy. You go with the guy that's had the two phenomenal years.
And ultimately, if you're talking about 2 years, whoever you draft is still going to be on a rookie deal. So you might as well just
hang on to him.
Yeah, hang on to him until you have to.
Well, yeah, or it turns into a Jimmy Garoppolo, and the guy turns out to be a player, and now you have to trade him to San Francisco, and he goes out there and plays great. The question, but remember, you don't do that until you sign AJ to a 5-year deal. After that, and then you can do whatever you want with the Sam Rosen, Josh Darnold, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, whoever you draft.
In the perfect world. That's the situation you want. In a perfect world, that's the situation that Bills fans want. You want
for
AJ McCarron.
Would we not trade our present day problems for those problems?
For those problems, what? To have AJ McCarron just ball out and ball out on a cheaper deal right now, and then you have to pay him, and you still have a rookie who looks like he can be good as well, and then you have teams actually like, yeah, we'll give you whatever draft picks for that rookie. I mean, that's the situation you want.
Right.
But, you know, all teams are not that lucky. Hey, we got this tweet in from Mike Camerato, and it says, if you got medically cleared and could come back, how much would it take? Now, he's talking to me, but he said, I'm not going to ask Steve because he's so humble, he'll say he didn't even play.
Yeah, I can't come back. I'm medically cleared to play if I want. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
I don't want no part of that.
You were just talking about when's the last time you actually ran?
I jog like in the rain, you know, to get to the car. Does that count? Or that's it?
No, because that's probably a slow jog too. Let me not go too fast.
I have not run competitively since for 20 years.
Ooh.
Yeah, listen, like, if I could still run, I'd still be running.
Well, I mean, no, like pick up basketball games and none of that stuff.
No,
you can't give that stuff up.
I did. It's giving up. It's in my past. That's in the rearview mirror. I will never run in a hoop game again. Man, I would break so fast.
You
something,
one of those guys that
pop.
Just shoot around, stand around the 3-point line and shoot? Stand. At least do that.
With emphasis on stand.
No defense.
No jump shots.
No defense. No
like going up off 1 foot to lay it in. No.
Steve, you're disappointing me.
Listen, live inside my hull for one day.
All right. What if it starts storming and you're on the golf course? And you're on the 18th hole.
Cart's close. I'll just hop in the cart. I'll pull out my – or I reach – I get. I go into the shelter, the lean-to, whatever's there, and call for the pro shop to come get me. Or I go knock on somebody's door on the course. Somebody's like, hey, it's raining. Can I come in for just until the rain passes? I'll stand in your garage.
Oh, man. Our Twitter question today, what would it take – or what wouldn't you give up if you were a GM of the Buffalo Bills to get up there to get a quarterback? We got another call. This is from Frank in Williamsville. Frank, are you there?
Hey, Steve, I'm with you, buddy. 54, right? In your mind, you think you can still do it and get out on the court. One time down the floor, you're ready to vomit. You're like, oh, my God.
I think vomiting, Frank, is like the least of your worries, to be honest with you. You're worried about pulling your hamstring all the way off your leg.
Listen, right now, a hard sneeze would do me in.
That too. Hey, I'm calling about this is a McCarron call, and I'm just thinking, you know, you got a guy that won two national championships, which is like the Super Bowl of college football, and we're looking for a Super Bowl quarterback, right?
Yeah.
How much of these other four guys won? I don't know, UCLA, USC, and I don't think they weren't even in the top four. I mean, I think that's worth something, because we know that this McCarron can play in a big game like that and succeed. He did it twice. I think it's worth looking into to see what this guy's got before we go ahead and sell out for these other four guys. And when you look at the past history, how many of our busts, I don't know, it's a bird in the hand kind of thing to me.
Oh, I agree with you to a certain extent, Frank, and you're right. To me, A.J. McCarron's very intriguing. I want to see what he's got, and I think I got some, and I can back it up, I think, with you know what we've seen from his career now and what we saw at Alabama. The moment's not going to be too big for him.
Mm-mm.
He's not going to cringe. The pressure of being a starting quarterback in the NFL is not going to be overwhelming to him. His media responsibilities, the fact that he's going to have 30-year-old men looking at him and questioning what he's going on, he has to answer them. He's not going to shy away from that. It's not going to be like Sam Darnold, who comes in as a 20-year-old who has to lead 30-year-old guys like Kyle Williams and Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer and LeSean McCoy. And he's got to stand in that locker room and tell him how it's going to be as a 20-year-old sophomore in college. That's tough.
And you got a whole city that's been waiting on you since Jim Kelly left.
It is not easy.
Right.
It is not easy. Now, there are some 20-year-olds who can do it. They can pull that off. That is part of their deal. And maybe one of these guys, maybe Sam Darnold is that guy. Maybe Josh Rosen or Josh Allen is that guy. You know, maybe Baker Mayfield, he has a reputation of being the guy that can do that. That's his thing that he brings to it. He's going to be a guy that – the locker room says, all right, this is our guy.
Right.
But I don't know if he can play.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's the big question. And a guy like A.J. McCarron, that's not going to be the issue with him. He's going to be able to stand up in front of a team meeting or an offensive meeting, and he's going to say, listen, here's how I want this play run. Run it like this. Or he's going to be on the field saying, hey, if you don't come out of that break better, you ain't getting the ball. Not only on this play, but no other play.
You're getting it again today.
You can go have a snack.
Right.
Because unless you come out of the break like I want you to come out of, you may as well not break the huddle.
You better go talk to Crossman and get on special teams.
A.J. McCarron's the kind of guy that's seen that. You can do that.
Yeah.
He knows that's how it works. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, A.J. McCarron's an intriguing commodity for me. I'm not saying he's the guy,
right,
but I'll tell you what.
Interesting.
He's not – these – quarterbacks are going to get drafted, whoever it is. Say we get the top guy we get just, you know, Sam Darnold. You think Sam Darnold's going to come in here and take one look at A.J. McCarron and going to go, why didn't he play?
Right.
Why has he been sitting? Who's he been sitting by? Andy Dalton? Andy Dalton's not that good.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he, you know, he's going to, like, wow. And A.J. McCarron will play better, at least at some point.
Because he's a veteran. Because
he's a veteran. Just because he's a veteran. He's
going to
snap that play. He's going to get in the huddle the first time and going to own it and going to spit that play out, all 22 words of it, and get it right.
Right.
And then, plus, as they break, you know, hey, don't forget A, B, and C, and U. Don't forget D, C, and F.
Exactly.
You know,
Darnold, and, you have Darnold in the huddle like, you got trips right.
Yeah.
And everybody's saying it like, dude, say the play. What are you?
Spit it out, son.
Spit it.
You know, that's – it is hard.
Spit the play out.
It is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why A.J. McCarron is, you know, a really valuable signing to me, right? Particularly at this point, we don't know what's going to happen in the draft.
Steve, you ready for some true/false?
All right. All right. Yes,
we're going to get to a break. On the other side of the break, we're going to get to some true/false. We'll get back into this discussion. It's the John Murphy Show, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
And welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones, Steve Tasker sitting in. You see the light at the end of the tunnel. I see it. The light at the end of the tunnel.
What do you mean?
We're about to be done here.
It's
our last.
Yeah, we're closing in on it. Show went quick, though, after we got started talking about training methods with knives and stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's just crazy. I don't understand it.
Yeah, we picked up the pace a little bit.
All right, so we want to get into some NFL true/false. These are different things around the league that we like to give our 2 cents and say this is going to be true or this is going to be false. So, Steve, we want to get you engaged on this one.
All right.
If you may. Maybe you've heard of it.
I am ready.
All right, our first one. The NFL's new targeting rule will save football. And a lot of people have been going back and forth on this one and the new rules and the new helmet-to-helmet rules and all of that stuff. Will this save football? I'll let you go first.
I think it's a step in the right direction. It might. You think about it, if they enforce it the way they do, and there's going to be a lot of and if they do it, and if football stays the way it has, they're going to be ejecting guys every game.
Right.
Maybe multiple guys every game. At first, it's going to be very difficult to get away from it for guys, but they'll learn. And I think the game's going to change, no question about it. But I think everybody believes that the game does need to evolve. And if this can be a step in the right direction, then, yeah, I think it could be one of the major things that changed the persona and the direction football was headed.
You know, I'll go true on that one. And I'm speaking from that. You have sons who play football. I have a son who actually plays football as well. And I always think to myself on this, like, I really don't want my son playing football. And it has everything to do with the helmet stuff. Everything to do with the concussions, you know, because I've seen kids at 10 years old get knocked out in football games in New Jersey. And it's just the talent. The kids are bigger. They're stronger. They're faster at 10. And they're knocking each other out. And so I'm like, your little brain is still developing. You shouldn't be taking hits like that.
Yeah.
And so something like this, and I guess this becomes the question, does it get worse before it gets better? For the league, and is the league willing for it to get worse? Because I feel like when you change this, if you truly enforce this rule and you start ejecting players, and let's just say you start ejecting a lot of star players, then all of a sudden fans are like, I'm done. I'm not watching it anymore. You know, and then you see the ratings go down a little bit.
Yeah, and also you get kids don't start playing anymore. You know, parents don't want their kids to play like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the league's got to take tangible steps toward making the game. And they got to see it. You got to be able to see it when the game is played.
Right.
And once that happens, then the game will, you know, this will move to the background and this issue will, at least, and rightfully so. If they can get rid of that stuff, I think it's a huge step in the right direction. So I'm with you. I think it's true.
I think this was the second thing in terms of trying to make the game safer, helmet-to-helmet hits we're talking about.
Yeah.
It was either, for me, you couldn't stop it unless you take the face mask off the helmet, like the old leather days.
Right.
Or you start ejecting players. Because if you fine guys $15,000 and the guy makes $150,000 a week, that little $15,000 fine right now, in his mind, it's not hurting him. Now, in the long run, he's going to think about it like, man, I can use that $15,000 right now.
Right.
But when those guys are playing, they don't care about that fine, especially if it's a big, important game and we can make it in the playoffs or something like that.
Yeah,
they'll go ahead and take the fine. But if you eject a player, that affects guys a little bit different.
They are far too reticent to eject players. I think they're far too unwilling to do that or have been in the past. Yeah. I think you got to put that on the table and leave it there and make sure that you not only when you put this rule in, you enforce it.
Right.
Like right away. Like you're out in the preseason. You're out. I don't care if there's four guys in one game. They're out. And if they're out, it's like the old fine we used to have. If you're out at halftime, you lose half the game check. That's like a suspension.
Wow.
You don't want to get thrown out. Particularly, and you think about it, there's some guys making $1 million a game. You're not going to make it. The quarterback.
Take away $500,000.
Now, quarterback's not going to get, you know, not going to put a helmet to helmet on anybody unless he throws an interception.
But that's the.
But then, you know, that's the thing. You have got to throw those guys out and dock them the amount of pay that they lose by getting out of that game. If they get out in the third quarter, they lose the remaining 25% of their game check.
Now, the question is, and nobody's answered this for me, if you get ejected, are you suspended for the next game?
If they don't take his money away, yeah, suspend him for the next game. But if you do take the money, that's enough.
But the way the rule is right now, if you get ejected from the game, are they suspending you for the next game?
I don't think that's part of it. Well, I don't think that's part of it. It's just the rest of that game.
They really want to enforce it. That's how you
– Oh, yeah.
Look, you get ejected right now, you're suspended for the next game too. Because now guys are like, all right, you just kicked me out of this game. We're winning this game. I don't care.
Right.
But you ejected me for next week too?
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's the next step.
And plus, yeah, you get in that – you put that scenario in the playoffs. And also they've taken it out of the hands of the officials too. There's an eye in the sky. They're going to be able to do this from the control center in New York. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be able to call down and say, hey – 23 is ejected for the game because of the hit. That's, to me, is an enormous component to this.
Yeah. All right, well, next up on our NFL, true or false, trading Odell Beckham. As we've heard a lot of chatter over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, the Giants are not openly shopping Odell Beckham, but they're fielding offers for Odell Beckham. And you hear they want 2 first-round picks for Odell Beckham. We all know the talent that he is. We also all know the things that he's done off the field. So the question is, trading Odell Beckham would be stupid. True or false?
I'd say no, it's not stupid. It depends. I mean, you're not going to trade him for a bag of footballs. But if you do get the 2 ones, it's not stupid. If you get a 1 and a 2, it's not stupid. No, it's not stupid at all. I think if you get a pick for Odell Beckham and it's inside the top 20, certainly inside the top 15, mm-hmm. you take it.
With all of the things that he's done off the field, and you're a coach, you're a GM, can you trust, okay, we're going to trade away 2 first-round picks for Odell Beckham where you can't trust this guy week to week? You don't know. He's going to lose a fight.
With a kicking net.
With a kicking net. He's going to, you know, act like he's peeing on a fire hydrant or whatever.
He's going to get caught in a video.
Guy.
He's going to get caught in a video with
whatever
white
substance. Yeah. I mean, you can't trust this guy right now.
Members of the opposite sex and stuff and in a hotel room and on video and it's bust loose and he's in places you don't want him to be and you certainly don't want one of your players dragging your team's name through any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He wants – and plus –
He wants
15, 16 million a year.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man.
I go false on this as well. Just for everything we're talking about.
It's not a bad idea.
And at the end of the day, I understand.
Get the right price.
Right, exactly. And I understand Dave Gettleman is saying you don't, and some others in that organization, you don't give up on talent. But I think, number one, he's a wide receiver. And this is spoken from 2 former wide receivers.
Listen.
Wide receivers. It is the sexiest position in the game, and I always say that. But at the same time, it takes a quarterback. It takes a lot of other things to go right before you can get the ball.
Now, you want to talk – I alluded to this early in the show, and I'll get back to it now. The conspiracy theorist in me, which is a small little guy I don't really carry around with me all the time. If I'm the Giants, I stay at number 2. Mm-hmm. I pick a quarterback, leave Peyton Manning in the driver's seat.
Eli.
But I trade Odell Beckham and sabotage Eli's ability to be successful. It gives me an opportunity to put the young guy in the second half of the season where all the expectations are gone out the window, put the kid in there, let him get some time and develop, and you got the draft picks from the Odell Beckham trade to build around the new kid. So you undercut Eli's ability to remain a starting quarterback by trading Odell Beckham to get draft picks to build around the guy you're going to draft at number 2 this year.
Are you a conspiracy theorist?
The little guy in me. Sometimes I pull him out of my pocket.
I mean, because you have a lot of people who have their different theories about things that happen in sports, like refs betting on games and different things like that and all that stuff. And I think you're starting to fall into that.
That's a little bit around a bend for me. That's my little guy's small.
Just to think about the GM actually, or whoever, the GM especially, pulling the trigger.
That's ownership.
Who's sabotaging Eli Manning, who, well, a lot of people in that city have been way ready to get rid of Eli Manning.
Yeah, Eli has not played well in the last handful of years. Mm-hmm. Giants fans will tell you that, and they you know they've washed it around saying, "Listen, bad offensive coordinator." McAdoo was in over his head as a head coach doing the play calling and all that. It was all stacked against Eli. Listen, it was Eli has not been playing well for a number of years now. And even when they won the Super Bowl, they got hot at the right time. It wasn't like he put together these phenomenal seasons. So Giant fans can call in and correct me, but they're kind of ready.
They're kind of ready to move on. I know a lot of them.
And this could be – Yeah. So I'm right, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they are, right?
Like,
I'm not saying anything
years.
That Giant fans have not been saying. They're saying – because they're notoriously impatient.
Right.
And they're so ready to move on from a two-time winning – Super Bowl winning quarterback.
You know why? Because even those years that he won the Super Bowl, Eli was – I mean, their defense is really – when you really sit back and look at it, the defense carried them through those Super Bowls. He made a couple big
Strahan.
Plays. Yeah, Strahan and Justin Tuck and all those boys, OCU Manura.
Right.
I mean, they carried that
David
team.
Tyree – is
that
the highlight? That's the highlight of Peyton Manning's career, not just David Tyree.
Of Eli,
of Eli Manning's career. That was the moment.
I'm telling you.
And
it's that catch, and then it's the Mario Manningham catch in the other Super Bowl.
Well, that was a good throw, though.
It was a great throw. He dropped it in the bucket.
I gotta tell you, that was a good throw. You gotta hand it to him.
On the other one, I mean, you gotta hand it to him for getting out of the sack and just throwing
Mike Carey was gonna blow the whistle. The official said I was like had the whistle in my mouth, and then he broke loose.
Oh,
it was going to be a sack.
Imagine if you're that guy, the official, and you blow the whistle.
You would never have known. He would never have gotten the pass off. He'd have blown the whistle, and Eli would have stopped. You know, the play would have. Yeah.
That's something he probably wrestles with in his mind. He probably said not wrestles with, but in his mind, he's like, I mean, I could have blew the whole play dead. And that play would never happen. Tyree would not have been a superstar from that. And Eli would have one Super Bowl, stuff like that. I could have just blew the whole thing dead. That's pretty crazy. Number three, NFL true or false. And this is something that some people might not have even known. But Chandler Jones actually led the NFL in sacks last year. I, for a while, thought it was Calais Campbell. Chandler Jones put up a lot of sacks out there in Arizona, but it was kind of quiet because they weren't winning games out there. But Chandler Jones will lead the NFL in sacks again.
It's not true. I false that.
False
I,
that?
I think that's false. Yeah, I think it's too hard to do it 2 years in a row as good as you are. Aaron Donald's doing a really nice job, and they've got, you know, Calais Campbell's coming back for another year. But you got all these other guys that we don't, you know, some of them we don't even know about yet.
Right.
You got like Miles Garrett
mm-hmm.
down in Cleveland. You got some pretty talented guys. But Chandler Jones, he ain't going to sneak up on anybody now.
Right.
Believe me, I know. I saw my guy Bruce Smith, who had 200 sacks in his career, and he had to do it, you know, you had to do it 13 at a time. You know, you get 13. He'll have 1 to 19 sacks in a year.
Yeah.
He'll have 14 sack game. But it's like anywhere from – 13 to 16, 17 sacks a year, and that's it. That's how you got to climb in there. So you'll have an 11 sack year because people just say, listen, that guy is not going to get us.
He's not beating us.
So, and he's got, we'll see if Chandler Jones can live like that.
I'll just agree with you and go false. Just because I think teams will slide to him. Look, everybody else on that team, you can ball out.
I said false too. He's not going to lead the league.
That's why I said false, right?
Yeah. You agreed with me.
Yeah.
Oh, you say you agree with me?
Yeah,
I thought you said you disagree with me.
No, I said I'm going.
Oh, all right.
I said
okay.
I'm just going to go ahead and agree with you. So I don't even know how we got true up there on the screen. You know, sometimes it doesn't go smooth for us, but it comes around.
Kelly's going to change
in a roundabout way. You know,
Donald is going false like me.
That's right. I'm going false.
There you go.
I just think teams will slide. Teams will slide over to Chandler Jones and take him out of the game.
Listen,
everybody else can get their sacks on this
team. As good as you are, as good as anybody is in the league, the great players, that when teams say, that guy's not going to beat us, that guy rarely beats you.
Yeah.
That guy rarely beats you.
They will take you out.
They
I don't care.
Take you away.
Special teams. I remember playing special teams, and there came a point as a gunner for me where it was like I started to see guys flying at me from all different angles. And I was like, and I know you did.
Oh, bro.
And it was like, yo – come on, man. Like, why I got to beat five guys going down the field here?
Listen, I went to my first Pro Bowl, and I would be out there. I'd be against their nickel corner and against a backup strong safety. And then the next year I come out, and all of a sudden I got both starting corners.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, bro, And I remember this too. I went to my first Pro Bowl, and I hadn't really thought about it, you know. Mm-hmm. So we get out there, we punt our first time. I run out there, wide left as a gunner on the Pro Bowl. The two guys on me are Darryl Green and Ronnie Lott. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh,
yeah,
dude,
like, what did I sign up for?
I'm going home.
All right,
it was
rough.
But yeah, when teams want to take you away, they will. So Chandler Jones is probably not going to. He may have a good year, but he's not going to lead the league in sacks.
Nah,
that's false.
I can see one of those. At the very least, Von Miller, one of those, Khalil Mack, one of those guys getting it again. Something
I agree
like
with
that.
You.
So NFL true or false? True or false? Brought to you by Yancey's Fancy's Artisan Cheese. We're going to get to a break, and once we get back from the break, we got a little bit of what have we learned, and then we'll get back into the discussion. We're going to take a couple more calls, so if you're on the lines, you can stay up there and try to get to your calls before we get off the air. 803-0550 outside Buffalo, toll free at 1-888-855-2550. What would you do if you were the GM? What would be too much for you to give up to get up there and get a quarterback? It's the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is brought to you by Advanced Alarm, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned, you ask, Steve? We had a chance, Murph and I had a chance to sit down with Bob Babbage and talk to him as he's introducing Brian Urlacher for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And here he is talking about Brian Urlacher.
I'm so humbled by the offer that Brian gave me to present him at the NFL Hall of Fame ceremony and, taking it very seriously. He's such a good guy and was such a good player, but more so than that, he was a great person to be around. So very excited about it.
And today we also got a chance to speak with Bruce Feldman on what he sees from UCLA's quarterback Josh Rosen.
His personality is just different than what you see typically from quarterbacks. Now, you guys, mentioned Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is a little different than a lot of other guys, and sometimes that can come across as aloof and maybe or smug or whatnot, or maybe it's a dry sense of humor, and I think Josh has that. I mean, I've known and been around him since he was a junior in high school. He's from the same town I'm from. But I think there's that. I also think there's an element of he's had three different offensive coordinators and three different quarterback coaches in 3 years at UCLA. That wasn't a fault of his, but I just think that you're going to get a lot of opinion on him, and he's a very polarizing personality.
Josh Rosen is a polarizing personality. He's actually a very good passer, the best passer, I think, many people think, in this draft. And obviously, everybody wants to talk about quarterbacks. The Bills reportedly trying like hell to get up there to get a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And we put the question out there on Twitter today. And what would you not, or what would you, yeah, what would you not want to give up? What would be too much to give up for one of these quarterbacks, whoever it is?
We got a couple of, they said, hey, no price is too high. Give whatever you have to give to get there.
Mm-hmm.
The second one also is that we found a lot of people say, yeah, there is a limit. And it usually comes down to around about between 4 and 6 draft picks, mm-hmm. whatever they turn out to be. 2 ones, 2 twos, or 2 ones, a 2, and a 2 and a 3 next year, right, that kind of thing.
Right.
So there's like, some people say, like, whatever it takes, there is no limit. And that means, like I was laughing, like, okay, let's move the team to Toronto and make that trade, right?
Yeah.
So no limits, Well, yeah, there is a limit. So what it is really the great question for that one. And we found out that most people do have a limit. It's around 4 to 6, 7 draft picks.
All right, we're going to try to squeeze a call in here. We're going to go to Mike in Lockport. Mike, you got about 15 seconds.
Okay, I wouldn't give up anything. I'd wait to see what quarterback falls in your lap. And second, if anybody watched the Senior Bowl, Mike White was the best quarterback on the field that day. Thank you very much. Time calling.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Mike White from Western Kentucky it's a good question. A lot of people like him, although the physical ability, he probably looked good in the Senior Bowl. His physical abilities don't kind of match up with the guys you're talking about at the top. He might not have as strong an arm, might not be as big, and other things as well. There's a reason he's not up there with the top guys, even though he did have a really good outing in the Senior Bowl.
You look at physically opposing. Look at Tom Brady when he was coming out. Wasn't physically opposing.
No.
For me, I just think sometimes we do get caught up in the big arms and all of that stuff, and those guys don't pan out. And you have some other Jimmy Garoppolo type of guy that ends up a really good quarterback in this league.
Hey, if you went by looks, I never would have played. It's true.
Steve, you still think
it's true.
You still say you didn't play.
I was on the team.
You were on the team.
But that's the way it goes. You know, you can't tell until you see the guy suited up and see him play. We'll see.
Well, we'd like to thank everybody who helped out. J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Kotenak, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, our producer, Mr. J. Bird, J. Harris. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.